waiting for the other chairpersons to arrive. If you allow me, I will do a bit of housekeeping on the side of my committee. It will take only 2 to 3 minutes. Then we will start. I don't want to be rude to start before the other chairpersons arrive. So I'll, because they are not here, if you allow me, I'll make a few announcements to my committee. And I wish everybody a prosperous new year, filled with good things only, good health, productivity in our work, all of us, and wealth, and peace, especially. Thank you very much. To the committee members of public enterprises, I wish you to know that I had applied for permission for the 9th of February. Firstly, even before I go there, last week's meeting and today's meeting flow from our oversight visit, the report of which we must adopt in the next meeting. Now, if you remember, when we were in PE in particular, when we were asking a whole range of questions after visiting the pipeline of transit, etc., there was a proposal that why don't we look at the whole infrastructure plan of transit. So much as the oversight report we have not looked into, I took it upon myself to go and extract issues that would need finality so that when we write the and endorse the oversight report, we would have made follow-up to the things we had said in the oversight are necessary. So hence, I tabled last week's meeting. Having gone through the meeting sometime, through the meeting of the proceedings of the oversight sometime in December, I extracted the issue of coal supply, which was very thorny, and this one of infrastructure plan. However, we still need to develop and adopt our own program as a committee, and you should be aware that there are still outstanding things like the oversight visit to Alex Koff and many other things that should also receive priority in the plan. There are many other things that are flowing from last year's plan that were not done, like the Transnet pension fund thing and many other things. So I put that on a draft plan, high on the draft plan, and many other things. I propose that next week on the 9th, we meet as a committee alone, without any invitees, to adopt all outstanding minutes, and there are many. I think we have a set of 6 or 7. Seven. Today will be the 8th set. Adopt the plan and adopt the oversight visit and talk to each other on any other matter we want to discuss with each other. So forgive me for having taken the initiative to extract from the oversight minutes the issues that I thought should be concluded as part of the oversight report. I had a first draft of the oversight report in December, and I had sent it back to both the researcher and the secretariat to rework. And I noticed that they have not even started to do what I said they must do in December. I had proposed that in the report, there should be separation of the key questions, answers provided, and recommendations, because I think that those are the things that should be standing out. But they are busy working on it. I hope that by tomorrow they would have circulated the oversight report to all of you again, structured in that kind of manner. Thank you very much. And before we proceed, whilst we're waiting for the two chairpersons, let us table the apologies to some from our committee. And a very special welcome to Madame Hajaj, who was recently in hospital. It's good to see you, and we wish you recovery and good health and a prosperous new year. Thank you. Yes, sir?
Can we just ask that the aircon we switch on, it's very hot inside here, otherwise we go to sleep. And Then there was also the other thing, actually, trade and industry is also invited here, but they have another meeting on the agenda that I saw at 9 o'clock today. So they are booked double. I don't know if you know about that.
They will know how to split themselves. Thanks for bringing that to the agenda. If they do apologize, we will understand that it is because of the double booking. But they didn't indicate to us that they will not be able to. Did they, Lisa? They did. Okay. So we will accept their apology. Thanks. Thank you very much. Take us through the apologies, Lisa.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Tisang Mujume, and I'm the Committee Secretary for Public Enterprises. The apology that we received for our committee is Dr. Mangena, who is attending the Chief Whip Forum. Ms. Bowman may be leaving us very soon. Yeah. And Mr. Golola will be late for this meeting. Dr. Koronov is attending a SCOPA meeting on behalf of the committee.
May I also inform the committee that we have three vacancies from the African National Congress. One from Dr. Pile, one from Ms. Loretta Jacobs, and another vacancy that comes a long, long time. So we are hoping that we will be filling this vacancy by next week. So we don't have apologies from three people because these two people don't exist. Don't take a chance. You see, in this house, it's only the two of you who are the opposition. The whole house is the ruling party, including Mr. Nana.
No.
Yes, I know. Thanks. And thank you very much for that. I don't know if we must start with introductions. I really don't want to be disrespectful to the other chairpersons. But if in the next 3 minutes, there are 2 minutes, they are not here, we will do the introductions. There walks in one chairperson. Your seat is prepared for you in front of them. Welcome and good morning. Thank you very much. Yes. Okay. We haven't poisoned you with us. Okay. We are correcting as chairs, so we can start with the introductions. I am Faithy Mento, the chairperson of Public Enterprises. I will ask the chairperson on my right to introduce herself. Just before she introduces herself, we had invited the Committee of Economic Development as well as the Committee of Transport. So they are here in our midst, I hope. We have also invited their departments, Department of Transport, who they have apologized. I don't know what reasons have they forwarded for the apologies. Huh? Are they here? Oh, sorry. Thank you. Transport is here. Trade and industry has got a clash. It's here. Thank you. It's represented. Thank you very much. Having said this, I will ask the chairperson on my right to introduce herself, and then the other chairperson will introduce herself when she joins us. Thank you very much. Chairperson, over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Matulara Coleman, the Chairperson of Economic Development Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Let's start with committee members of... there is a problem here, please. Can you have it? Let's start with committee members and then we'll go to our invitees as a host. And then we go, to our staff and then to our invitees. Thank you very much. Committee members, over to you. Thank you. We'll start here.
Yes, morning, Madam Chair, members. My name is Pieter van Dalen. I'm a member of the Public Enterprises Portfolio Committee.
Marnie van Dijk, member of the Committee for Public Enterprises.
Mlindi Nana, Public Enterprise.
Economic Development.
Public Enterprises.
Gloria Borman, Public Enterprises. Sorry, I thought you were taking our committee first. Thank you.
Thank you. Pierre Robby, member of the Portfolio Committee of Economic Development. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, sir, for Committee of Transport.
Stuart Ferrer, Transport. Manager Freitas, Transport Committee.
An apology from the chairperson of transport that she is running late, but she's on her way. She'll join us soon. Transnet, and shall we start with DPE first? Sorry, thank you, sir.
Fonzile Ngwenya Mabila, Committee on Transport.
Andrew Shaw, Department of Public Enterprises.
Sam Madwell from DPE.
Just hang on. There is a member that's still busy. Okay. No, we said Longene from Transport. May proceed.
Sam Madwell from DPE.
All other departments?
Chris Ntuli from the Economic Development.
Tamil Mungwana, Trade and Industry.
Mautu Vilana from the Department of Transport.
I just apologize to Honorable Member Chris Ntuli. He's a member of Parliament that we had missed, so not one of the departments. Thank you. Is there any other member that we have not yet introduced themselves?
Morning. My name is Phumzile Bengu from KZN, member of the Committee on Economic Development. Thank you.
We may proceed. If departments have finished introducing themselves, we will ask Transnet to proceed. Well, I thought you would lead your pack.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning to the Madam Chairs and to members from the various departments. My name is Chris Wells, Acting Chief Executive of Transnet, and I'll ask Madam Chair for my team to introduce themselves, starting with Sue on my right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Sue Lund. I'm a member of the Transnet Group Office. I'm responsible for policy work and research for the company.
Good morning, everyone. Honorable Chair, I'm Vuyo Kasha, Group Executive, Office of the Group Chief Executive for Transnet.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. I'm Moira Moses, and I head up the Transnet Capital Projects Division.
Good morning. My name is Pumelele Motsohai. Pumi Motsohai. I'm a board planning specialist in Transnet planning.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Lenny Moodley. I'm the Deputy CEO of Transnet Pipeline.
Good morning. I'm François Meyer. I'm responsible for rail planning.
Mr. Khwele, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Long Trailing. I sit on the Committee of Public Enterprises.
Are there any invitees that we have not given a chance? No, I want to hand over to the chairperson on my side. I think you belong to two committees. Don't you? I hope you are not dipping into the towel seven times in terms of remuneration. Okay, thanks. You know, your chairperson was complaining that you're introducing yourself only as public enterprises. Okay, thanks. Share insights about this meeting. If there is anybody that you have skipped, you'll forgive us. We, with Transnet agreed during our oversight visit, particularly in the lake after we have visited their pipeline, witnessed the unfolding of the pipeline project. We met in PE, and then we asked numerous questions, and then we agreed that it's correct for us not to ask piecemeal questions and get piecemeal answers, but rather to have Transnet come over and do a whole presentation on the infrastructure plan. Now, this is one thing that straddles various departments and various committees, hence we found it necessary to invite sister committees and their related departments to this meeting. I, however, regret that much as we agreed, was it late November? Yeah, on this meeting, and we had interactions with Transnet, you, everybody, including public enterprises members of the committee, only are seeing the presentation, the documentation before them this morning for the first time. And it's not a very good situation. We are particularly upset as the Committee of Public Enterprises because this is now a growing trend. Last week we had Eskom with the coal supplier. We could not find the coal suppliers much, but with Eskom it was inexplicable why their presentation we saw again for the first time in that meeting. Before that, we had sent DPE back in another committee meeting late last year where they were presenting, put a very vague document before us in the meeting. So this is a worrying, very, very worrying trend because members need ample time to familiarize themselves with the issues in the presentation and prepare themselves thoroughly for the meeting. Having said this, the predicament I have, and I'll ask the chairperson next to me to share her views also and members of the committee. I'll open this to the whole meeting, this issue, not only to public enterprise. How we must handle this meeting, given the fact that all of us are seeing this document before us. I know from our side of public enterprises that we are not very happy. So I would be guided, I will ask the chairperson to Uku Paula Fulendo, and then if committee members from all three committees also to express themselves on the issue, then we develop a way forward. But I also think that the infrastructure plan is of such great importance that there's no way we can have one meeting and that would be the end. After we have agreed on how we must deal with the situation of the report, the presentation that we only see now, I want to make a submission to all three committees that it might be the right thing to do that twice every year, once every 6 months, we meet in this forum to look into this issue of infrastructure plan and how it is unfolding, because it is billions and billions and billions of money that need careful oversight and stringent oversight in terms of monitoring the unfolding of the plans. Chairperson, over to you. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chair. Actually, that was my worry up to yesterday. I've been asking our secretary whether we've received any documentation to this regard. He said no. And unfortunately, I managed to speak to a few of my members, but it was unfortunate that we did not have documentation for this meeting. But just to save the COE and other members and the parliament from a fruitless expenditure, I propose that we continue with the meeting, and then we just put a strong warning that this should be the last time that we continue such a meeting without necessary documentation, because really we need to appraise ourselves before we could engage, because even though we're going to be getting a presentation, that doesn't mean that we are able to grasp everything on the same day or at the same time. We must be able to note something from our books and then able then to refer during our question time. So my proposal is that we give them the last warning and then we continue.
We note your input. I had already said that we'll hear members out, so I suggest that we co-chair because I might not know all your members by name. Let's take the members' views. I will take the members from my committee. You will take the members from your committee. Lest I don't call. Welcome, Chairperson, and Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. While the Chairperson is settling, let's take our views. I will ask the son to come and whisper after the gentleman and tell the Chairperson what we are busy dealing with now. Mr. I will take you in this order. Mr. Fande, Mr. Freyla, Mrs. Bowman.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I agreed from our side 100% with your view on this. I think Parliament should take up very seriously the fact that we received these submissions at a very late stage. And this came a long way now. Even with former chairpersons, Mr. Yunus Karim and Ms. Fatima Cohen, and you yourself, Chair, we actually beg these public enterprises to make these presentations available to us on time. And it happens now over and over that we arrive there and that we are not well prepared for our oversight function. Chair, if I can give you an example, last week we had ESCOM with our Committee of Public Enterprises, and also we received the documents on the day of presentation, and we learned from ESCOM that there's a huge quality coal problem, and at the same meeting, the coal producers told us the opposite, that there is no quality coal problem. And we as committee members, because we couldn't prepare ourselves for the meeting, we were in the dark. And we can't carry on like this. So I agree with you 100% that we must receive these presentations on time so that we can prepare well and that we can participate 100% on these committee meetings. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I don't want to belabor the point. I completely agree with the sentiments expressed. One of the committees I do serve on, in fact, is the Chief Whips Forum, and I actually think that this is an issue that Parliament should take up. We need to have these documents at least 2 days before. I think that the Research Department also needs time to go through there and be able to give us some kind of a briefing on that. What I often find in committee meetings is that we treat this as a lecture, whereby we have to sit for an hour and a half listening to a lecture on a presentation we should have received before, whereas actually what we should be doing is interrogating the actual information. So I really think we need to relook at this, and we need to take it up to a higher level even. Thank you.
The chairperson to take input from other committees. Mrs. Bowman.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not going to repeat what has been said. I just want to emphasize again that we cannot possibly do justice to a report, certainly of this size, in our oversight role. And I would support the view that we do need to continue today, especially in view of the fact that you're going to have to come back again and, you know, continue with it. And I would support the view that we do continue because of the cost of calling a meeting like this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Any member from Economics? Mr. Ntuli? Any other member? Okay, Mr. Ntuli.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think I would second Honourable Bowman to say it means then the department for today is going just to brief us. Then there will be another day for engagement. Thank you.
Good morning. I would like to take comments from the members of the Portfolio Committee on Transport, if there are any. Honourable Farouk.
Without belaboring, I agree.
Okay.
I have recognized Honorable Faro, followed by Honorable Ngel.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also agree with Member Chris. But warning them, it doesn't help. We always warn them every day. They do the same thing. Anyway, we've just told them, but we hope they won't repeat it again. It's very, very uncomfortable for us. Thank you.
I would like to also make a comment. Maybe there's something that we don't understand, which makes it a norm not to adhere to what we are saying. Is it possible that we can be told what makes it difficult to provide us with the documents? Why do we have to spend an hour discussing something that we have said before? Is there any problem from the department that and the parastatals that they find it very difficult to give us information a week before the meeting, so that they also allow us to discuss the issues in our study group before we come to the portfolio committee? Can I get a response that relates to the difficulty so that we can have an understanding?
Just before I take, Chair, with your permission, I saw a hand from Mr. Nana. Maybe he wants to say something before the translate response. And I saw Mrs. Ajit, with your permission. Can I take them and then they respond to your question? Thank you. Mr. Ajit and Mr. Nana.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to say it's a bad start to a new year and a new term. And I think it's completely unacceptable that the Department of Public Enterprises, a very important institution in the country, can continue doing the things they do. And I would agree with Maruf there that we would like an explanation why it is so difficult for a department to present documents in time for proper interrogation. We would certainly like to hear your views. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. This is, I'm battling to find mild words to express myself in this regard. But I think this is nothing else but sheer disrespect for Parliament. And in my little knowledge, if there is any fruitless expenditure, the person or persons who are the causes of that fruitless expenditure have got to repay it. I mean, the law is very clear in this regard. I'm a bit hamstrung, sir, because already a suggestion by Honorable Coleman has been seconded. I would have really wanted to see a situation where we, for the first time in our committee in dealing with Transnet, they know we like them very much because they are one of those shining examples. But I think at some point we have to draw a line and say enough is enough, even if it means we send them back. And whoever has been the cause for the fruitless expenditure, Parliament is going to take up the matter and ensure that Parliament is properly reimbursed. But as I'm saying, I'm a bit hamstrung because this view has been supported already.
I share the views of the honourable member that has just spoken, but I would still feel that in view of the fact that we are all here, it is not only a fruitless expenditure to Transnet, but it is a fruitless expenditure to all of us and the time that we have spent coming here and preparing for this meeting, and also in view of the fact that 2010 is a very short year. We cannot afford to postpone any meeting and any presentation. I would therefore propose that after they have explained to us what makes it difficult for parastatals and departments to give us the documents a week before the meeting, we then allow Transnet to present to us so that we can then get an opportunity of interrogating the presentation and the document. And if then there is a need to for further engagement, we bring them back to actually engage with us. That is what I would propose as a way forward. Thank you.
I think the two chairpersons have proposed, I'm not disregarding the members' views, that we receive the presentation. But it will be unfair for members to interrogate it. But I think we must start where you tell us your problems. But I think you have heard how unhappy and how strong the members feel. So tell us your problems, and then probably to save costs, you give us a better view of the presentation, and we adjourn, and we give members time to go and acclimatize themselves to the documentation, and then we meet again at some point.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the other two Madam Chairs, and want to convey to you our embarrassment and deep apology. This is not the way Transnet behaves. We typically are never late with our documentation, and I really regret that this has happened. And it will not happen again, and I assure Parliament on that. On the difficulty, we have no difficulty in presenting quality information to Parliament at least a week beforehand. The slip-up on our part, and it's not an excuse, is we, Madam Chair, are finalising our corporate plan for presentation at the end of February. And the people preparing this wanted to give you the most up-to-date information. That's not an excuse, but that was the rationale. It's not acceptable, and it will never happen again. And I would ask that you accept our apologies. And we want to confirm we have a deep and abiding respect for the committees represented here and the important oversight role that play. We want to assist the committees to play that role effectively.
From my side, I understand the explanation and I accept the apology. Well, I'm engaging with Transnet for the first time, and I think the assurance we are getting, we live with that for now until we are proven otherwise. But I think we need to continue the chairperson rule, actually.
Thanks. And finally, from the DPE, I think you must take the responsibility too, because it's your responsibility to make sure that we normally CC you whenever we invite the parastatals. So I don't think that you must escape our reps. So we hope that you too will commit yourself to making sure, and you'll go and tell others who oversee other parastatals, that from your side too, you'll make sure that this doesn't happen again. DP.
Chairperson and the chairpersons of other portfolio committees, I can only also extend our apologies. We will ensure, I will take it back and ensure that at executive management level, which is all the DDGs and the acting DG, that we take this forward so that we're not embarrassed in this way again with any of the other SOEs. So accept our apologies. Thank you.
Thanks. And members, from the chairing podium, we have noted your strong comments. We will proceed to receive the presentation
And if there are any questions that at the end of the presentation you want to throw to Transnet to take with them for the next time when we will meet, please feel free to do so. At this stage, then, I would like to ask Transnet to take us through the presentation, which we will not engage today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could I just confirm through the Chair how much time we've got to make this presentation?
Because now we will not be engaging, we will be a bit merciful to you, but we don't want to spend time in a meeting where we are not going to be productive from our side. So take us through the presentation, bearing in mind that you have a little bit more time, not too much time, because we don't want to spend our time here wasting time because we will not be engaging.
Thank you.
I see a hand there.
Just on a point of clarity, are we not going to be able to ask any questions from this presentation, even for clarity?
We will ask clarity questions, and we will ask them questions that they should go, and when they come back, they will provide us answers with. So we will ask questions, both of clarity and both of content, that they will. Thank you. Is okay with you, Chair? Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. We'll do our best to give you a good understanding of this very important infrastructure program. Just to let you know that we have presented this to 20 groups around the country, and 880 people, stakeholders, have been present in those sessions, which were also question and answer sessions. And we have summarized our takeout of those 20 sessions with 880 people and have submitted a report to Public Enterprises thereon. So there has been extensive consultation around the country on this plan, which we want to share. We also are excited about this opportunity and very disappointed that it's got off on the wrong footing, because it is so important that this infrastructure plan, which belongs to South Africa, is understood by all the key stakeholders, and that they're able to interrogate it and come to agreement with ourselves on its implementation. So we welcome this opportunity and avail ourselves at short notice to come back to this group for a question and answer session. So we are very keen to have your participation, your input, and we'll respond accordingly. Just on the overhead, we've set out how we want to break up this presentation. And we've set aside at least 3 hours for it. If that's too much, we will take advice from you, Madam Chair. But I will start off with a brief introduction and hand over to Mr. Kachler, who will deal with some really important things on policy and regulation. Moira Moses is the executive in charge of our rolling out our mega projects in a division called Transnet Capital Projects. And she will go through the total plan in summary, and then the detail will be provided by the next three speakers, and then I'll sum up. But just to start off, so that all members are up to date as to the structure of Transnet, Transnet does own, manage, and operate the national freight transport system, consisting of port, rail, and pipeline infrastructure. And therefore, whilst we used to have divisions that were involved in the movement of passengers, those have all been taken out of Transnet, largely are housed under PRASA, which is under the Department of Transport. To optimize the benefits of the assets that are in Transnet, we believe the system needs to be developed and operated in a coordinated and integrated manner to maximize the considerable investments made and to serve our customers better. And this plan, we believe, which is a long-term plan and is, I must stress at the outset, is dynamic. It's changing all the time because we're doing further research work and certain projects get definitions through the feasibility studies which amend this plan. And so it is dynamic. And I would welcome to come back to Parliament or to these committees every 6 months if you so require. To give the latest updates and to receive any further input from yourselves. And so it is a long-term infrastructure planning framework. But what I would like to assure the committee is that Transnet sees one of its roles is to provide the needed freight capacity ahead of the demand to enable economic growth in the country. On the next overhead is the corporate structure of Transnet, and within the group now there's only one company, and that's Transnet Limited. The operations of rail, ports and pipelines are carried out through wholly owned divisions. And so we have the freight rail division, which is the largest division by revenue of the business, and that's owns the infrastructure, the actual rail lines, as well as the rolling stock, the locomotives and the wagons. Rail Engineering is a very large engineering business whose main customer is freight rail, and it does the maintenance, it does wagon build, and we've now started a CSDP program where it will do assembly and engineering work on new locomotives. On behalf of the original equipment manufacturer. That's a very exciting development and is providing a significant number of jobs. In the port side, the National Ports Authority owns, it is the landlord of, and owns the properties through which the ports operate and provides marine services. Port Terminals operates all the container terminals and several other terminals in competition with the private sector, the other terminals at our major ports. Pipelines is the structure of pipelines on the east side of the country. The main business is the conveyance of refined product through the existing Durban-Johannesburg pipeline. And there's also a crude pipeline and a network of gas pipelines. The gas is a very much smaller part of the activity. And that Durban-Johannesburg pipeline is a major investment to replace it because it is now some 40 years old and is running at full capacity. Transnet has divested of most of its non-core businesses now, which, as I mentioned, did include significant passenger-related businesses. And the only one of significance to be disposed of now is Luxrail, which is effectively the blue train. Under the specialist units are specialist divisions which give services to the rest of the company. An important one to note is the Transnet Foundation, where Transnet allocates at least $80 million. This year it's probably going to be more like $100 million. To carry out our initiatives within communities and the upliftment of communities. Just on the overall capital investment and funding, we started on the significant investment in infrastructure some 4 years ago. And in the graph on the top left-hand side, it is a historical investment, you can see how the ramp-up in infrastructure has been very rapid, from $6.6 billion in 2005-06 to $19.4 billion in 2008-09. And in the year 1910, in the top right-hand graph, it's likely we'll spend invest over $20 billion in the year ended 31 March 2010. And what's quite exciting from South Africa's point of view, it means that over the past 5 years, if we take the 5 years to March 2010, Transnet would have invested some 74 billion rand in infrastructure.
So it's making a significant difference to the country. The full benefits, of course, have some time to come through, and many of these projects are still not complete. But some studies that we're engaged in and others are engaged in show that this infrastructure program has had a significant beneficial effect to South Africa, both on employment and, of course, in creating industries. And we believe that hundreds of thousands of jobs have been created. We're finalizing the study. It could be as many as 500,000 through this this program. The top right-hand graph shows the five-year plan that, Madam Chair, is in our corporate plan at present, which is 80.5 billion. But I would just like to update Parliament that we will finalise a new five-year plan on the 28th by the 28th of February 2010. And the early indications are that that new plan will increase the 80.5 investment to 93.4 billion, which again is pretty exciting that we have the capacity to do that. And that means a number of additional projects and increased scope on existing projects. The pie chart on the bottom left-hand corner just shows the split, which you can see is primarily ports and rail. And clearly, pipelines for the next couple of years will be quite dominant as we put in additional refined products capacity in the new investment, pipeline investment, which I alluded to. In the middle are the funding activities now. With an investment going forward of over 90 billion, we will require significant investment from funders to enable this program to be implemented. And I've shown in the central graph that in the past year we will have raised 19 billion. Very cost-effectively and efficiently in the debt capital markets. And what is important from South Africa's point of view, very important from Transnet, is we need to develop foreign sources of funding because there's a limited capacity in South Africa, and particularly as the total South African infrastructure program, including Eskom, gains traction, there's going to need to be offshore funding. And to date, we've secured 4 billion rand offshore investment into our infrastructure program. And I can report to Parliament that we have just listed our global medium-term notes bond program. That will enable us to issue bonds in the US and European markets any time going forward now as the circumstances are advantageous for us. And just looking at the challenges faced for South Africa generally, being at the tip of Africa, we're a long way from the major markets. And our exports, as you know, are largely commodity driven. And the markets for those have typically been Europe, Asia, and the US. And we're a long way from those markets. Also, we're a big importing country. And those markets that I've mentioned to you are the main source of our imports. So we're a long way from both the import and the export points, which does have cost implications because the maritime costs typically are the major cost in the logistics chain. Of course, with the downturn in the economy, those costs have reduced dramatically, but they've begun to increase again quite significantly, although well below what they were some 2 years ago. But the important part is that, if we can just go back to that slide, what is important for us going forward is with our new port at Kucha, which we want to make a transshipment port, it is well placed to be the midway between the large ships coming from the east to offload at that port and then return back and with short sea shipping from there up the coast of Africa to the destination.
or inland to South Africa, and similarly from the west. So Zaffa is ideally placed to be a transshipment port between east and west, particularly Asia and South America, and transshipping those containers up the coast of southern Africa. Just looking at the logistics challenges for South Africa specifically, South Africa clearly is well positioned to serve east and west coasts by sea, and already we have started initiatives with Angola, initiated by the President, and are cooperating with the Port Authority in Luanda to assist in the congestion there and the utilization of the Kucha facilities in that regard. And of course our rail network is strategic to the landlocked countries, Zimbabwe, Botswana, Zambia particularly, as it's their access to the port. And fortunately we're all on a similar rail gauge, which is known as the Cape Gauge, which is about a meter in width. And there'll be a lot of discussion on moving to standard gauge, which is about 1.4 meters and does enable faster speeds. But we don't believe it's appropriate in primarily as the network, certainly in the medium term. And we are involved in SADC partnerships to stimulate regional growth. On this next map, we've moved from Africa to Southern Africa, now to South Africa particularly. And one of the difficulties on logistics costs for South Africa, when you just compare logistics costs in South Africa to other countries, is that unlike other countries, our major market is Gauteng, which is a long way from the port, and our major manufacturing area is Gauteng, which is a long way from the port. Typically, countries locate their major markets and manufacturing facilities at port or close to port. In addition, our mineral deposits are largely a long way from port, which adds significantly to infrastructure, to logistics costs. For example, the coal deposits generally, one could say, are on average 400 or 500 kilometers from port. And we know that the iron ore manganese deposits at Sishen and around Hotazel are some 800 kilometers from port. So, of course, that has a significant implication for logistics costs. Just wanted to reflect very briefly the major volumes and associated by port and by rail line. If we start on the west side through the port of Saldanha Bay, that's the export of iron ore. That port is dedicated to the export of iron ore, and currently the volumes are around 45 million tons. We've got expansion of that to 47 million tons underway, and we've also contracted to take that up to 60 million tons. And we're further looking with industry, both the iron ore and manganese industry, of increasing that port capacity to around 90 million tons going forward. Cape Town does have break bulk, other multi-purpose cargoes, but we've just listed containers, and it's 700,000 TEUs, which is the commonly used term for containers. And what it means is 20-foot equivalent units. So that's saying that there's 700,000 movements of containers all put into a standard measure of a 20-foot. If we move through to Port Elizabeth, it has 300,000 of these equivalent units, and also is the port where nearly 3 million tons of manganese has been exported, and that will increase to 4.2 or possibly 4.5 million tons fairly shortly, and we're in a major project now of whether we should move the manganese export through to the port at Kucha or through Saldanha Bay, and that's been examined in detail with the industry. But certainly we are going to move it out of the port of Port Elizabeth. And then Durban is by far the largest container terminal, 2.3 million equivalent units. And of course it handles a lot of other freight, including bulk, and a wide range of multi-purpose, and of course vehicles. And then Richards Bay is the primarily the export port for coal. The capacity of the port terminal now is some 90 million tons. The capacity of the infrastructure is probably around 70 million tons. And we're working together with industry on planning increasing that significantly, certainly to around 81 million tons in the medium term. And the long-term view is that it should be 90 million tons plus going forward. Just referring to an international study which has been done by the World Bank on logistics costs, and has developed what is known as a logistics performance index with which it can compare one country with another across a wide range of key logistics measurements. It shows that South Africa is positioned with the countries around the world with a better performance, and I'll deal with that in a bit more detail in the next overhead. How the study from the World Bank, and it is available obviously on the World Bank's web, and this is the second time I believe it's been published, South Africa ends up 28th out of 155 countries. In other words, it's got the 28th best overall logistics based on that survey of the 155 countries that participate. And what the survey has done is divided the countries into the high income, the upper middle income, the low middle income, and the low income countries, because they did find that there was a strong correlation between good logistics performance and the wealth of the country, the wealth per capita. And so that that graph show on the vertical axis is the logistics performance index. And so the higher you are, the better your logistics. And as you can see, South Africa is in the middle there, pretty high. It comes in 28th, as I said. That line means it's trying to relate the logistics performance to the gross national income per capita of the country, as there's a significant correlation between the two. And if you're above that line, you're an overperformer. And if you're below, you're an underperformer. And so you can see on that basis, South Africa is a significant overperformer, and it's identified as such. It is grouped, in, if you look at the chart on the right-hand side, as amongst the upper middle income countries of that 155 countries. And of the upper middle income countries, it's number one. The other countries you can see are Malaysia, Poland, Lebanon, Latvia, Turkey, Brazil, Lithuania, Argentina, and Chile. So on the face of it, it's saying that in comparison to other countries, South African logistics performance is regarded as pretty reasonable. How do we at Transnet interpret this? Well, we're doing a significant dig through the data, and we would like Transnet to play its role to enable South Africa, first of all, to be in the top 20, and then in the longer term to be in the top 10. We believe it is possible to do that, and we need to play our role in that. South Africa, to summarize, does have a number of strategic challenges, all of which we need to address to enable us to have greater productivity and be better competitors in the international markets. But we do have a transport-intensive economy, very commodity-based. as I mentioned earlier, very high domestic logistics costs because our main economic area and our mines are a long way from port. We've done a lot of benchmarking with our customers, and the big difference is the distance from port. There are high ocean freights for container shipping due to distance from the trading partners. Fortunately, those have lowered due to the economic downturn. The regional connectivity, we do know, has a lot of logistics challenges, and we're working together with our SADC partners to overcome those. There has been a historic lack of infrastructure investment, but we're addressing that significantly, as I demonstrated with the $73 billion invested over the last 5 years, and a plan for over $90 billion for the next 5 years. However, we believe the demand for freight could double in the next two decades, and we'll demonstrate how we're demonstrating how we addressing that in our presentation. Clearly, policy and regulatory uncertainty, which Mr. Cutler will deal with, is going to play an increasingly important role on the ability to invest in infrastructure going forward. But just just to finalize my presentation, Transnet's strategic objectives are listed here, and we are operating the ports in a complementary manner to make the port system more efficient and to improve connectivity with rail and work in tandem with the shipping lines to optimize their visits to South Africa and the ports that they do visit. We're implementing a high-performance rail corridor backbone where, as I mentioned, we have a significant backlog of investment to make, but we've made significant strides in that. And I could mention that it's well known that of our 2,000 locomotives in current use in the railway, our average age is over 30 years. And in that regard, we haven't purchased a new locomotive until the current initiatives for well over 10 years, which has caused a lot of problems in performance. Well, by the end of March 2011, some 10% of our rail fleet should be brand new, and that is very significant for performance going forward. I'm sorry, Chair. Yes. Of our approximate 2,000 locomotives, approximately 200 will be brand new and in service by the end, around about the end of March 2011 through our procurement programs. Madam Chairs, I would like now to hand over to Mr. Cutler to deal with policy and regulation.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think that just to start this focus around the policy and regulatory challenges that confront the business, I should perhaps just state something that members, at least members of the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises, have repeatedly heard from Transnet. And that is Transnet's commitment to government stated policy relating to the designation of South Africa as a developmental state. And it's important to note that as setting to set the context for some of the submissions that we will be making. As part of us accepting our obligation to provide, to enable this developmental state, we've been committed to providing strategic essential infrastructure, as Chris has indicated, to enable the growth of South Africa and the competitiveness of our economy. And of course, the objective has been to do that and provide such infrastructure ahead of demand. Now, one of the key points also linked to that, being a company that locates its responsibilities within the context of a developmental state has been the fact that in the investments we are making, we've been able to take a long-term horizon. Unlike the private sector, which looks for the quickest returns, the highest and quickest returns at the shortest period, we've been making investments purely focused on ensuring that South Africa's logistics system is effective and enables economic growth and essentially, as indicated by Chris, moves us from just being the highest amongst upper middle income countries to being essentially in the top 10 logistics providers in the world. And so we've made certain investments which other people would not make if the private sector were looking at the investments that have to be made purely from a basis of the quickest way to get returns on investments, they would not have been made. Amongst those is the port that we're most proud of, our new port that's come on stream, which is the port of Mucha. Now, clearly, from what has been indicated in the slides set out by Chris, there is a clear focus on our side to ensure that South Africa is critical to South-South trade between Asia as well as amongst others South America, as well as equally enabling greater trade between African countries through what was reflected earlier as our commitment to promoting short sea shipping. So those have been investments that we've made, for example, in respect of the Port of Mucha, where we're not looking for immediate returns, but we do know that South Africa will be better placed and positioned through the commissioning of that port and therefore through the investments that we've made. And this is an approach we've taken essentially in a number of other areas, including in the construction of the new multi-product pipeline. When one looks into the tariff regulatory regime in place, it is clear that no private sector player would have invested as we've done in the new multi-product pipeline. But of course, we accept that we've got to facilitate government stated objectives of ensuring security of supply of petroleum products in the inland market. So, in some instances, we've moved and made decisions which, if one looked at them coldly from a private sector perspective, they could never be made, but we believe that they are fundamental and critical to the competitiveness of South Africa. Now, we've done all of this in a difficult regulatory environment, and we point out that current port, rail, and pipeline policy assumes that competition to Transnet operations is a prerequisite for freight system optimization. And it's a rather strange way to look at things, because if you're looking now with many other countries in the world, you look into the likes of the likes of Hamburg Port Authority, they're looking into acquiring rail. The same thing has been the case with the likes of the Port of Rotterdam. We have in South Africa the unique benefit of having the integration of port, rail, and indeed pipelines within one business to enable us to be effective in providing logistic solutions to our customers. Indeed, in other countries, that is being pursued, particularly by the private sector and the likes of in the mining areas of Australia. And of course, we know Brazil also is pushing up its own competitiveness, looking into its connecting its rail backbone to the ports. So we've got the benefit in South Africa where we already have that all integrated into one entity, Transnet. However, there seems to be certain assumptions that competition to Transnet operations must be a prerequisite for freight system optimization. Also, separating infrastructure ownership from operations is necessary for operational improvement. And again, as I've indicated, many other players in the world are looking into consolidation and are seeking to draw more assets to provide effective solutions to the customers. Also, that the state should own and invest in infrastructure and allow the private sector to operate. And we've always found that pretty strange that the state has to bear the tough position of investing in this infrastructure, but not actually exploit the assets that have been put in place and sweat them to get the returns that ought to accrue to South Africa. Also, there's an assumption that splitting Transnet into separate state-owned enterprises will benefit the economy. Again, as indicated with what is emerging elsewhere in the world, it would be a strange thing for us to pursue that, whereas the world is actually moving towards the direction where we are. The other point we want to bring to the fore is that current port and pipeline regulators' mandates encourage tariffs to be set low at the expense of long-term investment in infrastructure. And again, it's always been difficult for us to understand why we would do that, because you then infuse perverse behavior. If in instances when already there are certain limitations in the infrastructure, you provide for tariffs that are low in circumstances where you've got to finance greater strategic essential infrastructure for this country. Also, there is encouragement for inconsistent and discretionary regulatory rules, which in turn create uncertainty and risk for investment planning. And again, and I emphasize this point, given the extent of regulatory uncertainty in South Africa, there would not be many other private sector players. In fact, I doubt that there would be any South African private sector player who would make the investments that we're making in the regulatory environment in which we operate. In fact, we know that in the petroleum pipeline sector, that one player that got a license prior to us has not been able to move in respect of its investment for the construction of a pipeline. Also, we have noticed instances where regulators take on policy-making roles that impact on the mandate that we're required to execute. And again, we would want Parliament to assist us in ensuring that there's clarity that policy-making remains in the domain of government departments and government ministers with the oversight of Parliament, and the regulators' responsibilities is to execute and ensure the implementation of the policies that have been put in place. We deal with the issue around the National Ports Act, and again, this is a matter which I think Parliament is well aware of. It's an issue we've raised a number of times before relating to the challenges that that arise from that. Particularly, the National Ports Act envisages the incorporation of Transnational Ports Authority in circumstances where, if that were to be carried out, there would be a breach of key provisions of Transnet's major loan covenants, loan agreements. Of course, we have the benefit of government at the highest level having given a commitment not to allow for any activity that would place Transnet in that position of prejudice. But still, until such time that there is an amendment of that act, there remains that risk, and it's a risk which we constantly have to provide to investors. Indeed, even as we were putting up and listing the Global Medium Term Note Program, that's one of the risks that we needed to place before the investor public. And we've done so because also the incorporation or corporatization that's envisaged by the National Ports Act would reduce Transnet's ability to raise capital funding at optimal levels going forward, because there is a benefit for us, for the investments that we're making, to do them on the strength of a strong balance sheet provided by this integrated business that we have. Once you start breaking that business, and sometimes there's been the mistake of people saying, well, if you could break one business out, it would be sufficient for its own purpose. Clearly, we've seen that, for example, in respect of the new multi-product pipeline. If it were not for the fact that we have this integrated business that can take the risk and can get a better risk profile than any of these divisions separately, there would have been a lot of difficulty in executing the new multi-product pipeline. I've indicated, of course, that another private sector player involved in putting up, in constructing a new pipeline from Maputo has struggled and has not really moved in this area because of the difficulties which we confront in the regulatory space we operate in. It is clear to us that without a strategic SOE role, in appropriate combination with private sector investment, because we're not suggesting at all that there ought not to be private sector investment, but we're saying that there's got to be the right combination to allow that South Africa, that we're better placed to manage the risk to the logistics system of South Africa and advance the stated objectives of the developmental state. And saying it is important, therefore, to ensure that SOEs continue to play a strategic role and that the freight network will depend, if we don't do that, the freight network will depend on project-specific state revenue allocations, and short-horizon, non-integrated, costly private investment. And saying unless we ensure that we secure the integrated structure that we have of Transnet and set up a policy and regulatory environment that enables us to do the work that the developmental state requires of us, as is done in terms of the Asian doctrine in many of the other Asian countries who are beginning to leapfrog in logistic performance. Unless we do that, we'll be faced with the challenges that I've highlighted. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this next slide. It really just shows the difficulties we face around inconsistent application of the regulatory frameworks that have been put in place. And I just show, for example, I'll just deal with the pipelines, where you had in, for example, in 2007-08, we made an application for tariffs of 5.6%. We got only 0%. Applying the regulatory framework that then got put in place, in 2008-09 we applied for 15%, we got 4.43%. And suddenly, applying the very same framework that has been put in place, in 2009-10, we applied for 74.42%, consistent with the methodology that was put in place, and all we got was a minus 10.38%. Now, these are the challenges that we have where we can't really plan properly and understand where are we going to be sitting in terms of the regulatory regime and therefore what preparation and planning and risk management should we be putting in place. Minus. Yeah. It was actually a reduction by 10.3%. What we want to then just moving forward is just to really make the important point that policy and regulatory certainty is critical to us to understanding our objective and to carrying out the mandate that's given to us in pursuance of the stated developmental state objectives of South Africa. We need to look into economic regulatory policies, principles, and laws that reduce discretion and discourage the setting of tariffs at very low levels. I mean, if you look at places like the likes of India, other countries that have already moved before us around the issue of regulation, they've gone further now to set up very strict, what they call RDRs, reduced discretion rules, because of the problems that have been experienced of regulators who exercise a lot of discretion to the expense of providing the certainty required and therefore impacting adversely on the investments that need to be made. Again, we do not discount, of course, the need for us to have quantum improvement in freight system productivity, efficiency, and reliability. And this is, in fact, a critical aspect of our strategic objectives as Transnet, particularly as of last year. And again, the continued implementation of our infrastructure program with greater focus on procurement localization is also important. I think this is a point, Chair, that you have specifically raised with us, and we have since then ensured that it forms part of our strategy, that in our procurement process we ensure greater localization and support for the industrial policy that is being put in place for this country. And for all of that, it is critical that there be regulatory certainty in the space in which we operate in. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to just now move on to the National Infrastructure Plan and provide the committee with an overview of what the principles are that we apply, and also to give you just a high-line view. I know that, Chair, you certainly have been exposed to some of our big mega projects, but just to give you a flavor of the projects and what stage those are at. And then Pumi and Lenny and Francois will go into the rail pipeline and port plans in a little bit more detail for your information. So if we look just starting out at the National Infrastructure Plan, Transnet National Infrastructure Plan, what are the principles? What are the objectives that we're trying to achieve with that? And the first really is for this plan to provide a framework for all stakeholders, whether those be our commercial customers, whether those be our colleagues in other ministries. But it certainly provides a starting point for discussion on port, rail, and pipeline planning. It also provides for Transnet a basis for our capital investment program, and it gives us a very good indicator of what our funding requirements are going to be over the period. And as well, it acts for us as a governance document. So there's always one agreed plan that we come back to that is transparent and known. Just in terms of the various components of the infrastructure plan, it obviously starts with an assessment of what our current assets are across our business in ports, in rail, and in pipelines. We then look at what the requirements are going to be for the country in order to satisfy demand for the next 30 years. So that's the horizon that we use for our planning framework. We then apply various planning principles, and we'll discuss those in a little bit more detail. And we develop what we believe is the future network requirement. And as Chris has mentioned previously, this is obviously a dynamic exercise and a dynamic document because economies change, demand patterns change, and so Transnet needs to ensure that we are flexible enough to be able to meet those changing requirements. And from that, we then, once we've established those requirements, we look at developing various options and scenarios, and we'll share some of those with you today. And then we develop a five-year capital program, and that feeds then on an annual basis into the Transnet corporate plan, which then gets presented. So in summary then, I'm not going to talk a lot of detail on this, but from those various demand models, we then develop a national ports plan for each of our major ports, a rail plan, and a pipeline plan, which covers the various products that we're accountable for servicing. Just on the internal process, we can look at the next slide. Again, I don't intend to discuss the detail of it, but I did want to share with the committee the fact that it's a very structured program that we apply in terms of how we go about planning and how we ensure that that planning framework aligns with what our requirements are in terms of our reporting to our ministry and reporting to Parliament to ensure that we are meeting all the deadlines. In that planning process that takes place within Transnet, the National Infrastructure Plan is updated annually. It is aligned with the 5-year rolling capital plan, and as I've mentioned, it takes into account relevant trends and events, whether those be the establishment of new commercial hubs or IDCs, what significant changes there are in demand and supply, what changes there might be in key commodities, changes in the logistics industry, and other changes which our key customers might have in terms of meeting their supply. These next slides really are to provide you with a summary of Transnet's assets, and again we'll pick this up in a little bit more detail, but perhaps just to go through on the left-hand side in those blocks, 9 commercial ports, and as we've mentioned, we have aligned the ports into complementary groupings. So you would have western ports of Saldanha and Cape Town, our central ports, Mossel Bay, Mugapee and East London, and then our western ports, Durban and Richards Bay. We have 19 container berths, 3 automotive terminals, 26 dry bulk berths, 39 break bulk berths, and 13 liquid bulk berths. Francois will go through in a lot of detail our rail infrastructure, so I won't discuss that. And then we've also just provided you with a summary of the assets in terms of our pipeline infrastructure. Just to share in a little bit more detail, because I think this is quite important, what the planning principles are that we have, that we apply in undertaking this really important exercise for the country. We work from the principle that we must provide capacity ahead of demand. We must ensure sustainability of all our development plans for the country and for our customers. We've spoken about the fact that our approach is an integrated port, rail, and pipeline planning process. We work hard at aligning our plans with the national road plans as well as with the electricity supply demand planning. We are also have started to engage quite vigorously with other authorities to ensure that there is a consistent and well-coordinated plan across all authorities and that the various plans are talking to each other. We look at providing improvements in our own operational efficiency in terms of our planning around what future infrastructure is required. And in doing that, we do a lot of benchmarking with what the international best practices are and how we apply those to our own requirements. And the bottom line really is our pursuit of providing a reliable, a safe, and a, most importantly, cost-effective freight service for the country. In terms of our sustainability framework, the principles around that is obviously to ensure sound accountability and governance, that our returns are greater than the cost of our capital. We want to develop world-class infrastructure that can compete and be measured appropriately. We would like to provide a workplace in which our people can excel. Importantly, we want to care for the communities in which we operate, and to that end, we work hard at engaging with those communities. And we want to make sure that whatever we do in terms of our infrastructure development, that we plan in a way that is responsible towards the environment as well. I think Vuyo did cover the regulatory requirements, but what I've done is just to indicate some of the other acts and approvals which can impact our infrastructure plan and our various projects. Importantly, for each of our projects, we have to go through an extensive environmental impact assessment study, developing various options which could be used in terms of the manner in which we execute our projects. And for that, we need authorization. And just from a timing point of view, this can have quite a big impact on Transnet in terms of how long it takes us to deliver some of these projects. Generally, a basic assessment which is required for a smaller project could take between 6 to 8 months. And if we were to do a full environmental impact assessment, for which is required for our larger projects, it could take anything between 12 and 30 months to complete. If an appeal is received on our submission, it can take a further 12 to 15 months for that to be reviewed and for Transnet then to eventually receive authorization. So it's quite a challenging area for us, and we are obviously working very, very closely with the Department of Water and Environmental Affairs, but it can have huge cost and schedule impacts on the delivery of our mega projects. Just to go back to that slide, I'm not going to go through the detail, but also quite important is in terms of the water use and water discharge permits which need to be issued. Also quite a lengthy process and can have, again, cost and schedule impacts on our big projects. Just two that I would like to bring to the attention of the committee, which are currently issues for us. Part of our expansion on the iron ore line is the building of a reverse osmosis plant, which converts seawater, desalinates the seawater so that we can use that in terms of dust mitigation and control. And just as an example on the impact that can happen if we don't get the necessary approvals, we've been waiting for 15 months for the issuing of this approval, and we estimate that there's been about a 60 million rand impact on that project alone. But more importantly for the country, what's important is that Transnet is self-sufficient in terms of having the necessary water to be able to control the dust in that area. And if we start to suffer the sort of drought that we've seen in the Eastern Cape, then a lot of the good work that we've already done in terms of improving the environmental impact down in Saldanha will be for naught. On the pipeline, we've also had extensive delays in terms of the water use license. And all these things can, on a project of that magnitude and complexity, really impact your cost and schedule quite dramatically. Just to go through, obviously the division is involved in close to 350-odd projects, but we've just highlighted for the committee chair some of the major projects, just to give you an idea of what those are. As Chris has mentioned, we've done extensive work already in increasing our capacity to export more ore for the country, and we've close to completion on the 47 million ton upgrade, with obviously all the related infrastructure and new assets. And work has now begun on the second phase, 1C of that project, which will see the capacity of that line being taken up to 60 million tons. Here in Cape Town, the expansion of the Cape Town Container Terminal is well underway, and when that project is completed, Cape Town will have the capacity of exporting 900,000 TEUs per year from that facility. As we've mentioned, we're extremely proud of the new port at Nuka and the world-class container terminal that we have built and all the associated rail link. That project is close to completion, and that will be able to ensure that the country can handle 750,000 TEUs in that port. And also for us, very, very exciting development in terms of having a real world-class transshipment hub that can service the country as well as both the east and west coasts of Africa. The Durban Harbour entrance widening, the rationale behind that project was that if you look at shipping trends worldwide, vessels are becoming a lot bigger. They require a much deeper depth in which to operate. And our major port at Durban had a very narrow entrance. So we've more than doubled the size of the entrance. And what that does is that we can then host the much greater, bigger vessels. And also it makes it a much safer operation. We are subject to variances in wind speed and wind velocity, and shipping liners can now have the comforts that in Durban we can offer a port that can operate in most weather conditions. So that's, again, the benefit to the customer is obviously there's going to be far fewer delays, and the vessels will be able to come in, be serviced, their turnaround times are going to be a lot quicker, and that should see a reduction in shipping costs. To complement that project, we are also upgrading the Durban Container Terminal. We're using the same landmass, but through the adoption of new technology, we will be able to service a lot more containers on that that piece of property. And then, as we've mentioned, the new pipeline, which will see South Africa's fuel supply for the next 50 years, is also well underway. We've completed the two 16-inch pipelines, which feed the inland area, and construction has begun in earnest with the main trunk line linking Durban and Jameson Park. So I think with that, if we can go through a little bit more detail of some of the plans, I'm going to ask Francois to take us through the rail planning in more detail. Thanks.
Thank you. Before Francois does that, I think when you were presenting, we were also looking at our documents, and we think there is a slide missing. And actually two slides.
Okay. Sorry for that. Okay. Thank you for... Yes.
Is it possible that we can be provided with that?
Absolutely. Sorry for that. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair Committee, thank you for the opportunity. I'm going to quickly take you through just a short introduction into the demand forecasting methodology that we use, and then go straight into the rail plans in a bit more detail. Firstly, the demand forecasting objectives, just to give you an idea, we mentioned earlier that we try to provide infrastructure ahead of demand. And to be able to do that, we obviously need to understand what demand is. And we found about 5 years ago that, in fact, no such models existed. And simply extrapolating from past performance in the different sectors is not giving us an accurate reflection of what the future demand will be. We also understand that for how long do we need to forecast to be able to make proper plans. And the fact that we've got 5 to 7 year lead times for major projects, and also that you then have a further construction period beyond that, meant that we really had to take at least a 30-year view. And 30 years is a very long time in any kind of forecasting environment.
We then embarked in 2005 on this process, and we decided to look at forecasting of freight transport in South Africa in terms of economic performance as a good correlation. So the whole methodology that I'll show and share with you now is in fact a method whereby we convert economic performance in various sectors to what the freight expectations will be, or freight transportation expectations will be in those areas. Just a note that we then use this as the basis for all of our planning within Transnet. But it's also not necessarily rail-specific or port-specific. It's in fact all surface transport that we look at, and therefore we quite freely share this information with other government departments and even with our customers if need be, to ensure that we align our planning. This is quite breakthrough work that we've done over the past year in this particular field. I'm going to just briefly take you through the methodology now. Firstly, what we start out with is, in that very first block, a national input-output model. And what it is really saying is the national performance in terms of 65 commodities, and the 65 commodities we consume and we produce in certain quantities in rand values. We then apportion those activities to the full complement of 352 magisterial districts. So we apportion for each one of those commodities how much is being produced and consumed in each one of those MDs. We verify that, of course, with macroeconomic data and with some interviews and further processes. And what we end up with is a picture, as you see there on the right-hand side, which really shows you a density map of what is being consumed and produced in various areas. Right. The top one being the production areas where goods are being produced, and at the bottom where it's being consumed. The next step of the process is then to say, well, how will that change from what we see in the initial picture over the next 30 years? And for that, we use various macroeconomic indicators and forecasts, and we then superimpose it with quite an intricate process to then decide how that will change for each one of the commodities, but not only for each commodity, but also how different MDs or magisterial districts will start to perform in the future. So if there is an incentive, for example, to create an industrial zone in a certain area, that will be factored into our forecast. Up until this point, it's only static information. It's not really flowing. It's just showing that where things get produced and consumed. So the next step, well, let me just say this. Look at this particular picture of how the growth forecasts change for various commodities over the past 2 years. And if you take that picture into consideration, you can understand why it's very important for us to be able to respond with an appropriate plan or demand forecast that will show how that will normalize over a period of time. And this is all as a result of the recession. This was the dotted lines were, in fact, what we worked on in February of 2009, in 2008, and by February 2009, the picture changed completely. So it gives us a very good handle on how things will change or what the response should be if macroeconomic circumstances and local economic circumstances change. Right, what the forecast then gives you is not only a 2007 picture, but then also 2037 and all the years in between and how the density will change. The final three steps are really then to see how the flows will be allocated between the different MDs. And in the final assessment, what we end up with is a model whereby we get a map of all the flows on the surface in South Africa and how that will change over time. Now, it's not rail-specific, and it's also including all of the ports and pipelines and all of the other commodity and modes. And that's really the freight demand forecasting methodology that we use. On the rail plan, what I will share with you now is looking just very briefly at the network characteristics, what we have at this stage in terms of the network, what it looks like, then taking demand into consideration, saying how it applies to rail, and then finally taking you through the development plans and the specific initiatives and challenges that we have on hand. Firstly, if we look at the network as it stands at the moment, we are quite fortunate in South Africa to have a very dense network, even by any international standards. This is, of course, as a result of a history of investment where things were perhaps simpler to invest, and it's a long time ago. Let's just have a look at the network by 1910. You see, all the thick lines that I'm showing you there was already established by 1910 within a 50-year period. In fact, this year, the railways in South Africa is exactly 150 years old. So 100 years ago already, most of the major corridors were in place, even though they were not up to the standards that we would like to run trains on today. And over the next 100 years, you will see all the different connections in between the major corridors happened, and it was all part, I think, at that stage of a economic development policy to connect the agricultural and mining industry to the main network. Just important, or maybe interesting to note, is that the only investments since 1975 were made on the ore line, which is the line, the brown line that you can see running from Sishen down to Saldanha on that side, and the coal line, similarly, from Richards Bay towards Ermelo area. Since then, we have only made some investments in maintenance, sustaining what we have, and also improving some alignments and those kind of things. No new lines were really built. If we compare ourselves to the international standards, or internationally what the rest of the world is doing in terms of rail, we are featured as number 14 in terms of the total distance covered by rail, or route kilometers, which also means we're in good company. If we compare to the rest of Africa, we account for about 80% of the total route ton kilometers. So we're well above the rest of Africa in terms of not only the density of the network, but also how that network is being utilized. We, of course, are sitting in a situation where not all of the lines are equally busy or equally utilized. And the challenge we were facing is to understand what is core to our existence as a rail freight company, and what is non-core, or what can be considered as branch lines. And we then embarked upon this assessment about 2 years ago, refined it some furthermore, and it really, the strategy that's now evolving is giving the opportunity for concessioning to private operators. Just to say that approval has been granted by the Minister of Public Enterprises in terms of the PFMA, and we are currently doing some feasibility studies to determine the viability of each of the concessions and the opportunities that's out there. Right, just to show you what we mean by what is core and what is non-core, we classify the core network in terms of port rail corridors, making those connections between the major ports and the interland, port interconnects, which means that we connected the complementary ports to each other, for example, between Saldanha and Cape Town, or between Durban and Richards Bay, so that you can actually transfer freight in between those. And also, in terms of our stated objectives, to make sure that we connect to the rest of Southern Africa through cross-border interconnectors. The extended core is really where we have high-volume feeders, and that's typically where you have a high-density mine feeding onto the main network. Some network operation flexibility lines, and that's where we have to make provision for in case something drastic happens to, say, the Richards Bay corridor, that you've got an alternative route. And then finally, if we identify specific future network expansion opportunities, we would like to reserve, it's only two lines, in fact, currently, that we would like to reserve for future use. The rest of the lines by default then becomes the branch lines, and in many cases they are either closed, they're lifted, and a significant number are still active, even though it's low volumes running on there. You can also see in this table the distances we're talking about. So of the roughly 20,000 kilometers, route kilometers that we have at this stage in our stable, about 12,800 would be considered core routes for us. Right, just to show you where they are, this is the core network. According to the classification that I described to you earlier, maybe just to highlight the blue interconnects, they all connect the various complementary ports to each other, and the yellow lines indicating where we cross border, and they're quite critical not only for connectivity to the rest of the region, but in many cases they do carry quite significant volumes as well. Then by default what's left now is what you see in this picture as the branch line network. And you will notice the blue and black lines are all either lifted or they are closed, not operational at this stage. And I think it's important that we investigate what opportunities these can offer to economic development, especially regional. Maybe worthwhile just mentioning that in some instances there are quite logical clusters that can be identified, and we are not considering only these lines in isolation, but we're also considering opportunities for clusters of lines. For example, towards the western side of the Free State, northwest, you find an agricultural cluster, maybe a grain cluster, that is active very seasonally, and that can be utilized as such. And also towards Pietermaritzburg in this middle area there of KwaZulu-Natal, quite a lot of timber industries in that area. So it may be worthwhile looking at it from that perspective. Right, just some characteristics of the network now. I think we're also very fortunate in South Africa to have a large portion of our network electrified. Even though there are electricity issues, having a line electrified gives you a considerable advantage in terms of operating cost, especially over long distances. We have, in fact, three different electrification systems. As you can see them there, the green is really an old system that is a 3 kilovolt DC system, very suitable for passenger and light trains, not all that suitable, in fact, for heavy freight. Then the blue lines are where we have what is currently the international standard for freight trains, and that's 25 kilovolt AC. And then we've got one line very similar to that, but actually going for 50 kilovolts AC, and that's the line that is the ore line at this stage. We run extremely long trains over there. Now, the problem is if you've got different standards of electrification is that you actually need to be able then to change over. And you see the major change over yards there as red spots. That's points where you then have to disconnect your traction or your locomotives and then connect some other locomotives. And, you know, a typical example, if we go from the Waterberg and we want to export coal down to Richards Bay, you will notice that we start there at the top with a diesel section, and then we change over to from diesel to a DC or an AC traction, and then at Pyramid we once again change over to DC, and then at Ermelo once again back to AC, and then hopefully after all of that and we had all the locos in the right place, we end up in Richards Bay. Now all of that adds significant cost to your operations and risks as well. And one of the ways of dealing with that is, of course, by introduction of the new locomotives that was mentioned earlier. And these new locomotives are specifically put a picture on because we don't see many new locomotives all that often. They will solve that problem because they can run directly from the one type of electrification to the next without any problem. In fact, they can do it on the fly. This is the 19E dual voltage. Right, the next perhaps characteristic of the network to understand, I'm not going to spend all that much time, is that the train control systems, or what can be called the signaling. We have a diverse number of systems on the network at this stage, and it makes it quite difficult sometimes to operate. However, there are plans in place at this stage to standardize as far as possible. Next, we just look very briefly at the axle loadings. Most of our trains run at 20-ton axle loadings, which is quite sufficient for most applications. It's only the two major heavy haul lines where we have a 30-ton axle load and 26-ton axle load. And in those cases, we make special provision not only for rolling stock, but also for the track itself, the design criteria for the track. I'm going to move on now to the planning principles. And just an extraction from what Moira mentioned earlier is that, of course, we need to match capacity to demand. We need to improve operational characteristics where we can. We need to provide strategic and connectivity links. And then finally, we need to standardize as far as possible, specifically in the case of things like electrification and train control. Now, what I'm going to share with you in the plans are, in fact, almost 90% or more based purely...
Sorry, there is a question from Chairperson Mentor.
We're not as technical as you guys. AC can be alternating current. It can be anything. What do you mean exactly, AC, DC, and all those things? Thanks, Chair.
My apologies. Yes, I will try to clarify. I'm an engineer. AC is, I will certainly do that. AC is, of course, alternating current, as you've mentioned, and DC is direct current. The only difference really is that you get a fluctuation in your current. It goes through a sinus curve, positive, negative. Whereas with your DC current, you've got a positive and a negative wire, effectively. The implication on railways is quite simple, that your AC is really the preferred way to go, because you can go long distances between substations. It's much more efficient, and we need to be energy efficient in this country, make the best use of what we got. So that's really the nitty-gritty of that. My apologies.
Would a more simpler explanation be that the AC is what you get from Eskom and the DC is what you get out of a battery? Thank you.
Thank you very much for that explanation. I'm going to go a bit more technical. The very first principle is, in fact, most of what we're going to share with you now, because that applies in most instances. How do you make sure that you've got enough capacity to service the demand? And that's a very simple calculation, really. It's to say, well, how much capacity do I have? And that we calculate simply by looking at the track, assessing what the standards are, and how many slots you have available for trains to run on your tracks. On the other side, you say projected demand is a function of a great many things. It may be just the commodity type that you want to transport, what the train looks like, and it also may be how that will change over a period of time. In the end, when you divide your demand by the capacity, we get a utilization factor, and the utilization factor is just a percentage of the number of slots that's being utilized at any point in time. Now, we try to color code it to make it easy to assess, because we've got, you know, more than 1,000 sections of line. And you'll see for light traffic, it's less than 60% utilization. We make it green. And then it changes up to the point where you reach your traffic limit, and that's the orange lines. And that's really where we're saying up until the yellow boxes, you can get away by reorganizing your business and operating things slightly differently. But when you reach an orange box, you have to throw some serious capital and infrastructure at the problem. And once you've exceeded, of course, you need to either just make some tweaks to capacity, but finally, when it becomes purple, it means you'll have to build additional lines, do some major investments. So just a very simplified way of looking at it. We, of course, would like to see most of the network running on that beautiful yellow color, because it means that we are optimally utilizing our infrastructure and we're getting the most efficient payback from the investments that we make. But, of course, we don't live in an ideal world. I'm not going to take you through the details. You will see in your packs there are slides specifically explaining each one of the boxes and how we get through the methodology. Just to say, show you on the right-hand side there that we start with a freight demand forecast, and that's really the picture that I showed you earlier of what is out there to be transported. We then determine a railable portion, what we believe to be railable, because not all freight is rail-friendly. You know, some freight is just by nature much more comfortable on a conveyor belt or even on road. And then taking the surface forecast then for all the modes and then assume a certain market share and how that we believe that market share for rail is going to change over time. And it may be driven by the aspirations we have as a company, but it also may be driven by certain aspirations from national government or even by customers who would like to really make use of a mode that is suitable or more suitable to their requirements. And then we assume a certain efficiency improvement in the way that we operate. And that particular one I may perhaps just share with you very briefly. That is, for example, to say that we are not utilizing our slots all that efficiently currently, and that we want to improve our slot utilization by making sure that we've got longer trains or consistently run longer trains instead of running short trains or loose locos in between other trains, because they effectively eat the same amount of slots. So it's not, if you look at coal exports as an example, there's very little you can do in terms of improvements. We're currently sitting on the green box, and there's already an optimized, consistently we're running 200 wagon trains or very close to it. But in the general freight sector, we can certainly make sure that we improve the train lengths and so forth to make sure we better utilize that. Now, that is already factored into our future planning so that we're not planning to be inefficient in future. And then finally, we convert our rail demand per commodity to the equivalent number of trains per day that will be required. And that's how we end up. The final picture, keeping in mind the color coding that I showed you earlier, gives you effectively for each section that we've got in the country, and I've just taken a short snapshot of this, it gives us the number of operational slots, first of all, and that's over there. And saying on that section you've got 22 slots, and that is the utilization factor over the years and how it will change up until the point where you know, for example, over there, we need to start doing some investments because it's turning orange. And that's how we do our planning effectively. It tells us where, when, and how much capacity will be required into the future. Just to give you an indication, if we take the whole network and we now color code it and we say, well, how good or bad are things as we stand right now? You'll see that most of the network is underutilized. You'll see most of it is green, lower than 60% utilization. However, there are certain sections where we are, as is, already struggling to get the number of trains through. Notably, the Hotazel manganese export line and as well as some few sections around Gauteng. But mostly it's looking pretty well, and I've been asked to explain what the slot is. Basically, a slot is just the opportunity for a train to run through a section. So That's right, yeah. typical case, if you've got a line, you can maybe run 10 trains or 20 trains per day in a specific direction through that section. And the slot is just that opportunity that we identify then, or that we plan for a train to go through. Of course, that slot, the number of slots available will be greatly enhanced if you double the line, or if you've got more passing loops in between where the trains can pass each other. If you look at the picture now and see how it will change from 2007 to 2037, this is an animation that will run through, you will see how the colors change, and it's almost like somebody having a heart attack over time. So you can see how it just clogs up and it's getting worse and worse. Interestingly enough, still most of your smaller feeder lines remain green, and they are not going to get congested even over a 30-year period of time, even if you double the traffic that's going to go through. But we do find that the major routes, our major corridors, will all take significant strain, and in some cases we will have to make some major plans. Purple indicating typically that you would need to double a line from a single, making it a double. And many of our single lines will have to be doubled in that period of time. So by 2037, things are not looking all that good. And that's why we now need to have a plan in place, as a master plan, to say, what are we going to do to address that problem? I'm going to take you then through systematically what our plans then indicate, and it's very high level. The detail can be shared at any stage if need be, but at this stage, just a brief overview of the different initiatives we will have on rail. Starting on the O line, of course, it's one of the really stars in our system. 860 kilometers long, it runs on 50 kilovolts, alternating current, and we run a 4-kilometer train on that, so it's quite a long train. I'll show you in the next picture exactly what a 4-kilometer train looks like. There it is. It's just coming out of a tunnel. This is on the west coast, and you follow it from there all the way, and there's the end of the train. So if you need to make a decision about whether to stop at the next crossing, you better make that decision a long time before you actually stop. It is, in fact, the longest operating train in the world, and we are very proud to have that. If you look at the investment plans for that particular line, We've got different phases, and it's going to, in fact, we're making provision in this plan to ramp up even to 105 megatons per annum. And basically what it requires is just increasing the number of passing loops on that line. It's a single line, and the number of passing opportunities so that you can get more slots available to be able to run more trains. We have also considered running longer trains. That's also an option, but it seems to be, from a technical point of view, a little bit more tricky to do. What we, of course, are driven by in this particular case is very much that particular industry or sector, what their appetite would be for selling their product, because it's such a dedicated line. Transnet then needs to be in a position to respond very quickly. And therefore, in our capital planning, we do planning as if by 2015 we should provide that capacity, although that will be delayed depending on what the appetite would be from industry. The Western Cape itself is not showing all that much of a challenge. If you look at Western Cape, basically the line that runs up to the R from Cape Town, the connection to Mossel Bay, the connection up to Bitterfontein on the west coast, and also the connection that goes to Saldanha. In all of those instances, unless something dramatic happens, we cannot see that there will be major capacity constraints. We've got plenty of capacity on those lines. However, there's certain outdated infrastructure that needs to be replaced, for example, signaling systems, all part of the standardization effort, and those things are planned, as you can see there. if we now move to the central port system, that includes the connection to Kuga PE East London, and then going further up towards Bloemfontein and Hotazel, where the manganese is mined, Sishen, in that area, you see a totally different picture. We've got purple coming into play very, very quickly, and it means we need to do something quite drastic. In fact, you can see the effects of the recession. In 2007, we were already running in a so-called red zone in many of our lines, and as the volumes dropped off a little bit, we very quickly came back to green, but it gives you a false sense of security because we really need to act quickly to create more capacity. That, of course, will be impacted on by the decision to either take, you know, manganese either through the central ports or through the western ports, and that will be considered as well. Just some other connectors, interesting facts in that particular region. Of course, the interconnect between East London and PE and Kuga is not that well established, that particular line. That's from Cookhouse to Blaney, and we are planning to invest in upgrading that line to acceptable standards so that, you know, the East London area can partake in whatever opportunities Kuga will bring. Also, we are working with PRASA, for example, on an assessment for the Bloemfontein to Maseru section for new passenger services that they want to bring in there. And, you know, in the long term, one of the options, if container volumes take off significantly in that region and we need to position containers from the PE Kuga ports to Gauteng, we may be able to split the routes of manganese and containers by taking containers via Bloemfontein, which at this stage is currently mostly is running via Kimberley. Getting closer towards Gauteng, we find that both of those routes are, in fact, very good. The Kimberley to Gauteng, as well as the Bloemfontein to Gauteng. Bloemfontein route is highly underutilized. It's a double line, and there's simply no volumes at this stage. Kimberley section is, in fact, taking a bit of strain, but we do have plans to double the single sections and put some new cords in and so forth. As you can see, all of that is in that table. When you look at another approach to Gauteng that is taking quite a bit of strain is what we call the NAFCO, the KwaZulu-Natal corridor to Durban, and that approach from Rietvallei into City Deep, we are sharing with PRASA some infrastructure over there, and operations are quite complex in that area. If you look at Gauteng itself, it's such a beast in terms of what it consumes and produces that you really got to look at how you can best serve that. And from a rail point of view, we have a long history of various lines intersecting Gauteng, most of them, in fact, using or being used by PRASA, and most of those heavily utilized by PRASA, in fact, for your suburban trains. One of the concepts that originated...
Sorry, if I can just interject. I think it's quite important for the committee to understand that passenger rail always takes priority, and obviously that has a big impact on us. And ideally, certainly on our high-density freight lines, we would the best option would be to have dedicated freight lines, which are separate from the passenger lines, because you can get a train that's delayed for several hours because it's, you know, the passenger trains take priority on that.
You are absolutely right as far as that's concerned. We then looked at what would be the most appropriate model then, or most appropriate configuration to then get either to and from Gauteng, but also getting around and through it, because not all traffic actually wants to go to Gauteng or Regionet. It actually just wants to bypass, and there's no logical bypass at this stage. We looked at examples in Russia, for example, around Moscow, places in Chicago, as well as something in a different mode, but something like the M25 running around London. And all indicated that a ring just on the urban edge would appear to be the way to go. So that is what we then started out as a concept, and we were trying to see if we can make that ring feasible. We then looked at various options, and I'm not going to go into the details of all these options, just to all the little green connectors. It was an attempt to find a route past Gauteng and also to separate from Prasa where we can. On the southeastern side, cost was a major factor, but we were able to find the route. The red ones are indicating no-goes, whereas the green lines seem to be doable. Northern bypass, high cost, very difficult to do, but it's going to be unavoidable. There's only one route that we can take. We even considered going from roundabout through Olifantsfontein in between Tshwane and Johannesburg, see if we can find a route there, because that particular zone is becoming congested very quickly. So if we do want to reserve a transportation corridor, this is the time to say something about it. We did run into the difficulty of running into the cradle of humankind. So that would have been frowned upon if we were trying to go through there. And on the western side as well, we were really faced with some very difficult terrain, topography, environmental issues, and so forth, and we were not able to find a suitable route or a suitable bypass on the west. So we have to go further westwards if we want to bypass Gauteng, but in the end, our assessment showed that maybe we don't need to do that. You know, maybe we can get away with only half a circle. And this is, in fact, the final concept that we put on the table as a master plan for a ring around Gauteng. Only two new sections, effectively only one new section, if we don't go for a bypass further westwards, and that is between a place called Skansdam and Hotel in the Vereeniging area. For the rest, we will then just utilize what we've got and realign and make sure that it is good enough quality to run our heavy trains through there. This concept's been tested with local authorities, with customers, and so forth, and it seems to be favored by even the provincial government as the way to go. I'm going to skip over this slide and then go straight on to the NATCOR. NATCOR, the only thing I want to say about the connection between Durban and Johannesburg is that even though it looks quite promising that we've got plenty of capacity, only starting with real issues by the end of 2028, thereabouts, it seems like increasing capacity on that particular line is going to be extremely difficult to do because of the topography. And we try to find a good route. We simply can't find a good route. And it will be, really, we need to justify huge investment at that stage. So be aware of that, because if we are going to run out of capacity on that line, what do we do? And one of the options would be to reroute traffic via a much more suitable alignment from Durban to Richards Bay and then up towards Gauteng, even though we have not discarded the option of addressing the NATCOR capacity problems. The Richards Bay Corridor, or the CO line, as it is, very good standard line. And the nice thing about that particular line, if we can only double up one section, a tunnel section on that particular corridor, the opportunity exists to almost double your capacity overnight. Even though it's going to be quite expensive to double that section, the payoff is very good. The line is of good quality. It's good alignment. You can run long trains on it. So all the things that will count for us gives us the opportunity there. And then just finally, something that came a bit of a surprise to us on this side was, in fact, the high demand for flows along the route from Durban via Swaziland. So if we model it purely on modeling principles, there seemed to be a very high demand. When we checked it, it seems like quite a bit of traffic actually routes, southern African traffic, routes via Durban. And there's quite a bit of demand for that. And also in our economic models, it shows that the northern provinces of Limpopo and Mpumalanga their average growth rates are significantly higher than the rest of the country, or the predicted growth rates. So they will consume more and also produce more. Right, the Maputo corridor, that's been talked about quite significantly. We need to make sure that we've got sufficient capacity on that corridor. We do have sufficient capacity on that corridor as it stands, although there are opportunities for improvement and making the alignments a little bit better, but we will certainly be able to match the demand from Maputo. And then the last system that I'll share with you is the Northern Systems. Quite important to have the connection to Zimbabwe operating well, and there, as you can see, plenty of capacity. That's the bottom block here, the green. Plenty of opportunity there for additional trains to run on there. One of the big unknowns for us is, in fact, the Waterberg. And this particular forecast does say, well, if we just continue with the Waterberg as is, if nothing substantial happens in the Waterberg, we in any case need to address our capacity problems. But if there's a significant demand in the Waterberg, as many people predict, then we obviously need to look at quite seriously at alternatives. And that's the next slide. And in this, we are working with industry and in particular with Eskom to understand what the future demand for transport from the Waterberg will be, not only for exports but also to supply some of the power stations that are currently running out of coal in the Mpumalanga and Highveld coalfields. So just to give an idea, all the red lines that I've shown there are possible new alignments that we'll have to build to just create capacity into the future. That study will be completed at the end of February, and we will then have at least an idea of what the options are. My final section is just about terminals. It's a very short section. We, of course, operate terminals as well. The concept really is to a terminal is where we handle containers mostly and some other bulk as well, and that is the offloading and loading facilities and intermodal facilities, so from one mode to the next, typically road to rail and from rail to road. So we've got at this stage a significant number of these terminals all over the country, and our long-term strategy is to see what would be the best positioning, size, and operations of those terminals. Now, it would seem to us that the best way to deal with the amount of traffic that's predicted for Gauteng, specifically for containers, would be to build some or other mega terminal at some stage. Now, just in terms of classification, a small terminal is something that you see there at the bottom. It can just be a flat piece of land. It doesn't even need to be hard surfaced, where you simply got a forklift or something similar to load and offload. Intermediate terminal is something that looks like that. That's if anybody's familiar with Pretcon in Pretoria, Tswane, that's an intermediate. It's got some hard surfacing, but they only work during daylight hours, and it's quite limited operations. Large terminals, we only have one in this country, and we really complement it by saying it's a large one. It's not really all that large. It's up to 1 million TEUs that it can handle. In this stage, we've got City Deep that's getting close to that. Mega terminals, we don't have any of those here in South Africa. And just to show you, this is what a mega terminal looks like. This is outside Chicago, Center Point. This is shortly after it was built. You can see on the right-hand side all the rail infrastructure, all those lines over there. Typically can take quite a long train, up to, I think, 80 wagons. On the left-hand side, you've got the road infrastructure and your interaction then on that side. This was initiated by a railway company, and it was in the middle of nowhere on the urban, or right outside the urban edge of Chicago. Within 4 years, this particular terminal looked like that, and you can see it fully utilized. It is now expanded into warehousing facilities, logistics infrastructure, even a town that's being built in that area. So in terms of the vision of Gauteng, of what we require, this is the kind of vision that we've got. Give you an idea, this particular facility can handle roughly, say, about 2 million TEUs per year. And we estimate that for Gauteng, we would require to go to about 5 million TEUs in 30 years' time. So we will need 2.5 of these to be built in Gauteng if we were to address all of the transportation requirements. So we better start thinking hard and quickly about what we're going to do there. Just positioning, possible positions of where that can be, taking into consideration that we then have a Gauteng freight ring that runs around that I showed earlier, then several concepts emerge. One is north of Tshwane, a place called Pyramid, and the Tshwane Council is quite keen on actually developing that, and we're working with them on that. Central Rand is another facility that we've got on the eastern side, close to Benoni. Falcon is right next to the N1 highway for Vereeniging area, and a new one that's emerged over the past few months is called Tambo Springs, or it was a farm called Tambukiesfontein, and we are engaging with some private parties who are interested in developing that and giving our inputs where we can. In terms of Cape Town, a bit less of a problem or less of a challenge. We don't believe we're going to run out of capacity all that quickly. But if we do have to do something in Cape Town, probably the best position for that would be in the region of Kraaifontein. And we did investigate that very early stages, so it's not worthwhile buying property in that area right now. The Durban area, different story. We are looking at the new airport at La Mercy as possible expansion, the port itself, of course, we need to reconfigure. Cato Ridge, we are also investigating that with the local authorities, and then the airport site, and Pumi will share with you with regards to the airport site, the opportunities we're considering there. And that's the end of my presentation. Thank you very much.
Chair, could I ask, do you want a break, or should we carry straight on?
We'll break for 10 minutes. We have had a brief caucus as the chairperson of different portfolio committees that are jointly sitting here. And we have decided that we are not going to continue with the second part of the presentation, influenced by the following. One, there is limited time. If we were to take the whole presentation, members would not get an opportunity of asking questions of clarity. And number two, we are identifying a need for having a one-day, full-day joint sitting. That would also bring in presentations by the Department of Transport and the Department of Trade and Industry. And in this meeting, they came, they are here, representatives of both departments, but they don't have anything prepared that would relate to this presentation. So what we are going to do then, from now up to 1 o'clock, we are going to allow members of committees to ask questions of clarity and comment. And then at the end, the three chairpersons would raise their observations, which would then inform the way forward for the next meeting.
I will now open an opportunity for members to raise questions of clarity. We'll start with the members from the Committee on Trade and Industry. No? Economic Development? Yeah, we'll start with you.
Okay, we now have the opportunity, Economic Development. May we see the hand? Okay, can I give to Comrade Chris, Dr. Ravi? Economic Development? That's all. Okay. Comrade Chris?
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. And we do agree with your with your thinking to say that the presentation was a bit long. Chairperson, on slide number 15, they talk about minus 10.36. Of what? We did not understand exactly what maybe mathematics and what does that mean? I want to check with the Transnet that to build a new rail, then to put a parallel one, the cost factor, what is it, if you can elaborate on that one? Lastly, it's about air pollution, if they've taken that into account, vis-a-vis, let's the rail where you use the locomotive, which uses coal and the electricity, when that is taken into account, what can they say? Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Julie. Honorable Dr. Rabi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is in the Western Cape. It relates to the development or phasing out of railway lines and so forth. Now, my constituency is a rural constituency, Madam Chair, and the roads is really deteriorated there because, especially, it seems to me that the rail between Bedarstorp and Caledon and Cape Town, I see, I looked at your future plans for the Western Cape. It's not utilized a lot. I'd just like to have I think Mr. Mayor addressed this in this. What is the long term? Are they contemplating to phase out this line? Because with due respect, I think it will be the end to our road system if they phase that particular railway line, if it's going to be phased out. It will have dire consequences for the economy, for the whole areas as well. I'd like to have their views on that, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Ravi.
Chairperson, I'm not sure if one has missed a point because of the long presentation, but under infrastructure plan, I'm not sure if the department has considered potential obstacles or challenges that may extend this 30-year plan to 35 to 40 years, you know, to be proactive and plan in advance. And on the path complementing one another, if we can get a breakdown of programs as to what each program is doing, so that it is clear to us, lay people, as to how these programs are complementing one another. Thank you.
Thank you. I take it that's the end of the members' interest into this presentation from the side of the economic development. Okay, thank you very much. From my side, I think, Comrade Chris, you want to a follow-up or an addition?
Just another bite. Okay. I forgot to ask that the entire working relationship with the Department of Transport, particularly when it comes to rail, do they talk to each other? are there any plan where they coordinate their planning? Thank you.
Thank you. I can just build on that because it has to do with there's a lot of information even as you go forward. The slides were just too much, I think 100 and something. And we've already presented 50-something slides within about just 3 hours. So I think the issue around integrated planning comes across very importantly. As much as we're talking intra-integrated planning within the SOE, I think it's important also to look at external stakeholders. That is very, very important. And the issue around capacity of some of the external stakeholders, like your local government, your provincial government, because take into consideration that with Transnet, I think that's where capacity is concentrated. And if you were to take a plan, a proposed plan to local and provincial level, what difference will that, for instance, will they bring within, you know, what you have brought to them? The other issues around the economies of the road and rail, I mean, there's nothing in terms of the analysis. That also, to me, it relates to the lack of integrated planning, because if we're looking at that, cooperating with the departments relevant to relevant to road infrastructure and so forth, looking at the impact, negative impact, the courier or the freight is making on our roads, the freight services are making on our roads vis-a-vis the rail and so forth. And I'm worried also around the issue of you in your earlier presentation slides, you focus more on return on investment, which is more on a profit, you know, as against, you know, I know you're looking for, with that profit, you want to reinvest back into development. But is that the only way of making sure that you get more out of, you know, what you are doing, rather than focusing more on ensuring that whatever systems that are in place in terms of governance, they talk to each other? I know you talked of regulator, because some regulatory bodies are meant to assist the poorest of the poor, are meant to assist those that are still underprivileged and so forth, and also to ensure that there is fair, there's fairness in terms of role playing. So as one of the stakeholders who is being also regulated, obviously you'll feel that you are not being played fair. So what I wanted to know is it that important to you, or will you see the value in integrating your planning with or talking to other stakeholders and understanding the reasoning behind everything, so that we can together then plan forward? I think that is very, very important in terms of economic growing the economy of the country, so that we look at all sectors. More focus also is on the long-term planning. 30 years, of course, now you come with 5 to 7 year planning, but I think what is important also for the betterment of our, actually for the quicker economic growth, is focusing on the immediate needs, of which I think I liked the fact that you also pinpointed the fact that there's no, we have a skill shortage. But there's nothing that says to me there's something that you are doing to mitigate that challenge. I thought perhaps you would inform us, especially around the freight logistics area, you'd inform us about your plans going forward. What are your immediate, what are your short-term, medium, and because we already know we have your long-term plan here. And what is it about the
what is in the 30 years. Because, you know, we came back even after, you know, the previous regime. When we came in, we found lots of 30-year planning. What is in this 30 years? Is the logic behind that that perhaps some of us do not understand? Why don't we talk 20 years? Why don't we talk 15? Is there anything that maybe we're missing that we need to understand? Because really I personally would want to understand the logic behind the 30 years. I think that is the Omoloto Corridor. I just don't hear anything about that. I have a lot of interest, of course. And I think economic movement and also in terms of passenger and problems around Moloto, you know, that area, and the challenges around the very same challenges that you mentioned. Because I think we are overburdening Maputo corridor, and is it possible not to open the line between the very same Kendi Richards Bay via, I don't know, up to Gauteng via Moloto? We need to know all those issues. What is, have you abandoned that corridor? What are the reasons? Because I only still see Maputo corridor. Or are there any challenges that you can share with us so that you are able to understand? Because a lot of money has been put already into that, especially the feasibility study on that corridor. I know I can go on and go on, but let me give an opportunity to other chairs and committees. Ms. Peng, is that an overthought? Because I thought I was wrapping up. An afterthought?
No, just a question.
I'm asking whether I should, is there, must I really give you an opportunity, taking that I thought I was wrapping up for the committee.
Let's allow them to, then we'll make our closing remarks.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I have heard that the Transnet have said mostly they are using coal to their freight or to all the rail trains and everything that they are using. But I would like to know whether they have any plans on the reduction of emissions, as they have an impact on the global warming. Thank you.
Thanks, ma'am. Ma'am Peng, may I then hand over to... Should I give to Mem Bengwa in or?
Okay,
the chair. Thank you. Thank you very much. I would give an opportunity to Transnet to respond to the questions that have been raised by members of the Portfolio Committee on Economic Development, as well as the remarks that were made by the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Economic Development.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to make sure we've got the order right, I'd like to divide up the questions to the right person, either myself or the person who's best able to answer it. On the first question on slide 15, that was a negative. It was actually a reduction, a minus 10%. That means whatever the overall revenue was, it was 10% less in that year.
After you leave, we struggle with the audio volume to recap what
you said. Okay. Thank you. So slide 15 was, in fact, a minus. So the rates went down by 10% in aggregate. Then related to that presentation, I'll ask Weir to deal with the relationship with the Department of Transport, particularly with respect to rail.
Thank you, Chair. Transnet and the Department of Transport have bilateral arrangements for engagement on a whole host of matters. In fact, we have on a quarterly basis a bilateral committee which is co-chaired by myself and one of the Deputy Directors General of the Department of Transport. So on all of the issues relating to Transnet and impacting on the Department of Transport. There is a process for that for that relationship. I don't know whether you want me just to stop at that, Chair, and I'll take other questions maybe integrated to that. Yes. Oh, yes, I think there's the point that the Chair had raised around integrated planning. I think the first point just to make on that is that if you take, for example, the Transnet National Infrastructure Plan that we're presenting before you. That plan, had there been engagement on it before with certain departments of government, including the Department of Transport. Pursuant to that, it went to Cabinet. And then Cabinet then required that there be a national dialogue on it, a national consultation. And that consultation has covered local government structures, provincial government structures, national departments across that would be interested or would have issues to raise around this point, as well as just the general public. So there's been a lot of the interactive process in dealing with this. We too equally participate in a process led by the Department of Transport known as the National Transport Master Plan Process, NETMAP, which the Honorable Chair of Economic Development Portfolio Committee raised around whether we're factoring in movements, not just about freight, but also matters relating to passenger transportation and the need to move things off bulk commodities off roads into rail. Yes, we have a process around that which we involve in, which is led by the Department of Transport as part of the NETMAP process.
And if we could deal with some thoughts on the cost of constructing, Francois, a parallel rail, and make some comments on the air pollution. Really, it's diesel, not coal, diesel versus electricity for us, and reduction in emissions, I would, of a new technology and something along those lines.
Yes, as far as costs are concerned to construct railway lines, there is no magical number that we can give you, but I can certainly tell you that to double an existing line to the similar specifications, so you've got a single line that you want to double, it is significantly cheaper, in fact almost 60% cheaper than having to create a new alignment completely from scratch. And it's not only just the land and property costs involved in that, it's also the actual construction of the alignments, so to create the gradients and the turning circles that you require. To, however, upgrade a line to a new specification, so creating a line that will run longer trains and higher axle loads, typically you will not save anything by making use of an existing alignment, because you have to, with the new specification, build as if you're building from scratch. So that's the long and the short of it. As far as pollution is concerned, I'm really not in the best position. We have looked at considering, for example, in our cost calculations, the effects of, let's call it carbon credits. Certainly when you look at rail, rail is contributing significantly less than road in terms of the carbon footprint that it creates. It's much more efficient in terms of carbon as a transport mode. And it's really a quantum leap from what road is offering. When we compare electrical versus diesel, of course, if we look purely in isolation, then we will say that
electrical is the way to go, but of course you've got to consider where that electricity comes from. And for that we really need to talk to Eskom and say, well, what in fact is the full effect of having all the electricity that we use?
The electricity remains largely from coal-driven power stations, so one's got to take that into account. But the latest generation diesel locomotives are significantly more fuel efficient than what we've had up to now. And so the our new generation of locomotives comply with the strictest emission controls that are required in developed countries. So it really is a factor that we take account of going forward. On the Bredasdorp-Caledon line, I'm going to ask Sue, who's charged in our company for focusing on the branch lines, if you could respond to that one specifically.
Thank you, Chair. Just to clarify, the Bredasdorp-Caledon line is not being closed, Honourable Member. It is an active branch line, as you correctly say. It is classified as a branch line, and in that regard, we will be putting out expressions of interest to call for whether there are any parties in the private sector that would be interested in operating that particular branch line. So it is one of the branch lines identified for the first phase of concessioning this year, and we will be communicating in more detail with the provincial government about the rollout details of that plan. I should just indicate we haven't really had an opportunity today to go through a detailed presentation on our strategy on branch lines. It's a strategy that's been developed in close consultation between the Department of Transport, the Department of Public Enterprises, and Transnet. I know that the Department of Transport is wanting to have a wider discussion on that strategy, and maybe there'll be an opportunity at the next session to do that. But we will be rolling out that strategy in accordance with the approvals that have been given by our minister, and seeing whether we can generate the interest that we think there may well be in the private sector to pick up the operation of those branch lines.
Related to that, could we deal with the Richards Bay and Molotta corridor? Francois, have you got anything you can add there?
The information that I have is, in fact, that the Molotta corridor was something under consideration for as a passenger corridor, and we are talking to Prasa on a monthly basis, meeting with them to align our plans and make sure that we don't, at the very least, interfere in the long-term plans. But also, if there is an opportunity for us to use that particular alignment for certain freight movements, why not? Surely we will consider that. I don't have the latest information on the Molotov corridor, unfortunately.
We can give more information if it's required. Yes. We'll give you a more full answer. We don't have the specifics. It's not a core corridor at this point in time for ourselves, but we know some planning's been done, and we'll come back to you on that if we can. On the planning cycle, the 30 years is not a magical number. It was just a long way out, but we've got information that is in five-year chunks all the way up to 30 years. So we're able to give a 10-year plan or a 15-year plan or a 30-year plan. We wanted a sufficiently long planning cycle so that we could actually plan for things like, for example, the airport site in Durban and when it may or may not be needed. Because if we didn't take that long-term view, there may not be land available when we need to make further expansions. So we do need to take a 30-year perspective. That doesn't mean to say we neglect the what we call the short term, which is this year, and immediate needs, or the medium term, which is 5 years. Now, why we've focused on a five-year capital plan, it's to link in with the expectation of our shareholder and the PFMA. So we table a revised five-year capital plan annually. And so we've
We've distilled out of our longer-term plans, our 5, 10, and beyond plans, what are the priorities for 5 years, and that's captured annually in the corporate plan, and reviewed every 6 months formally within Transnet. The reason we haven't dealt with in our plans, in what we've presented to you now, with some of the immediate short-term issues related to skills or procurement, is because this was a presentation designed primarily to engage on the National Infrastructure Plan. And to include all of that, which we have in great detail in here, would have made it far too voluminous to deal with. But we do have a very specific skills plan and the role Transnet plays in developing skills, particularly artisan and engineering type skills. And in fact, we're presenting that to a number of government departments pulled together by the Department of Public Enterprises shortly, and are happy to share our skills plan with this committee at any time. Let me see what other return on.
Excuse me. I think that the Transnet is taking too long to giving long explanation and responses to what has already been presented. You are not short in your responses, and as a result, there is no time for members to engage with you. You have responded to issues raised by three members only, and the whole hour is gone. I would request that you be precise and short in your responses so that we can get the participation of members from other committees. We have just responded to one committee. Can I then invite members from the
Public Enterprises?
Hand over to the chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just before I take members, I thought that Transnet would bring this thing to the fore because it is sitting with transport here. When we met you, you highlighted the fact that your order book is MTS Freight Rail because FRASA is not ordering from you. And I think that is an issue that needs our joint consideration of transport. I thought you would bring that to you. I don't know, are you so scared of transport that you only raise your concerns in the corners with us? So having said this, I hope that we will map this also into some joint planning going forward. Having said this, may we take members of the Public Enterprises Committee questions? I note Madam Hadjage. Anybody else? Van Dalen, Van Dijk, Korenhoff. You're not a member of my committee. Which committee do you belong to, sir?
Transport.
Okay.
In light of time constraints, there's obviously going to be very little time, as my chairperson has said, of actually getting answers. Can we respectfully ask Transnet at the next session to come back with these replies in a written or presentation format in terms of what might go forward now? Otherwise, we are not going to get through, Madam Chair.
Okay. Accepted.
Chair, if you then grant me, so that you close, there is one chairperson speaking because the one chairperson speaks. Allow me to ask my question and then so that one chairperson will close at the end. Let me take the members as indicated. Did I skip anyone, members? Hololo? Okay, fine. Madam Hadjage?
Thank you. Posing these questions, and I think we'll await a written reply to these questions. Going through the planning and the policy and everything else which has been given to us this morning, my question is that taking into account
South Africa's interest in the development of Africa in the NEPA program of the African Union. What role does Transnet play in NEPA, the NEPA programs, to ensure the growth and development of the African continent? This is quite a wide question, and I know that South Africa has played some role, but I really want to know the specifics of what is happening or not happening and what are the challenges. The second question is regarding Kuha. As you said, Kuha has almost completed 84% or 87%. It is a concern that some companies are pulling out of the port. And I would like to know, in terms of a desirable situation, what does Transnet think, what kind of business or investment is needed to make the port viable? And the last question at this point is in the infrastructure in rural areas. Now, in terms of that, I think we have a fairly good one, or we used to have a fairly good, especially the branch lines in the rural areas. And for some reason, before 1994, many of them were stopped, and it has caused tremendous problems for passengers from the rural areas. What plans, if any, do you have to reinstate those lines or create new lines to make traveling for our people easier and also easing the load on our the road system in South Africa? Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I see nothing in this presentation as Transnet is the cause that all these trucks are on the road. And, you know, because the inefficiency of Transnet caused all the load to go onto the trucks. I see all these bulk programs and everything else. What are you going to do to convince the people to use Transnet again? Because what I see here is a gradual growth, but we are looking for, like, big bang, everybody off the road and onto the train again, you know, not a grand like it was before. And then the theft of your infrastructure. You talk about branch lines that you are wanting to give out to private people, but have you gone and looked at them? They're not there anymore. They have been stolen. So it's going to cost a lot of money to build these branch lines again. And then, you know, the dilapidated state of stations like Tosrivier. You are not maintaining what you are having. The taxpayer, he drives around in his car, and he sees all these broken windows, all the fences are down, and no more trains on the train road. So they don't see the ports you are building. They only see what they see every day, and you are not doing or maintaining what you are having. So I foresee a lot of problems to change that mindset. And then the coal transport. I mean, Eskom transports a lot of coal via truck on the roads. They are breaking up the roads. Are you in a plan to put where these railroads are not, to transport from the coal mine to the power stations that they are building? A lot go on conveyor belt. I see you put in pipelines for the fuel, but nothing. And I think that all the public, the public enterprises department should get together and they should find out what are the needs of each other and then come up with a plan and then make sure that at least we take that off the road first, you know, before we start thinking about convincing other people to use your service. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, in the first presentation, the acting CEO referred to the funds available, but very little, to the funds required for this infrastructure program. And also referred to additional resources of funding to be found. And I think it's very important, you know, it's easy to say what we need, but we want what is the solution. If there can be more elaboration on the funds for this infrastructure program, and to tell us where will the funds
come from, because it serves no purpose if you've got a lot of plants but it's not linked to funds for the future. Otherwise, some of these plants can just be filed. Chairperson, then a second concern, or to get some more clarity on, is in slide 56, Transnet referred to lines that are underutilized. And there are many lines that are underutilized. And the question is why? We need a more elaboration on that. Is it because of the demand is too little, or because of the supply that is inadequate? Because, Chair, it came to my knowledge that from certain contractors that it takes almost 1 week for goods to be transported from Gauteng to Cape Town by rail, whereas a truck on the road takes about 1.5 to 2 days. So is it because of the supply side that is inadequate, that can't meet the requirements or the conditions of the demand? Chairperson, then another thing that I need some more clarity is this Waterberg coal study. You will remember that last week Eskom told us about the coal reserves in the Waterberg area that's on the brink to be not exploited, but to be investigated. And this study, according to Transnet now, will be available at the end of February, that we get more information after February during the course of the year from Transnet and Eskom. You know, the link between the building of lines to Waterberg, where as soon as the mining companies is going to mine these coal for Eskom. I think that is very important for the future economy. Then lastly, Chair.
I don't want members of public enterprise to use up all the time. There's going to be, the other committee should also ask their questions. So saying this, I think that is your last question and that you will be brief.
Yes, I just want to know agriculture. Where is agriculture on the priority list of Transnet, taking into account road transport? Because we only refer here to pipe, railway, and ports. But taking into account emerging farmers and the agriculture in the rural areas, is there no consideration for road transport provided by Transnet for the future? Thank you.
Thank you. Firstly, I think Transnet should be congratulated with a new strategy that they're developing for the branch lines to involve inter-departments discussion and plans moving forward of at least 8,000 kilometers of branch lines. I think it's a good initiative. Let's wait for the strategy and engage. But I think it's refreshing to know that you. Using your initiative. The question on the national infrastructure plan, you replied on to a previous question that certain departments are being consulted and these processes, but I don't hear whether there is a national infrastructure plan. What platform are we going to use? Are you linking up with National Planning Commission in the presidency to coordinate this Transnet National Infrastructure Plan with other state entities like Eskom, future nuclear power plants, the Planning Commission? I fail to see in your answer the bigger picture. Where does your national infrastructure plan fit into a big national infrastructure plan? So if you can respond to that. The consultation and processes, that's fine. But we need to see physically how does it fit into the bigger picture. If you travel in any railway line, say for instance from Johannesburg to Cape Town, you find a lot of housing stock next to your railway lines. Small little stations, trains don't even stop there, they just pass. Some of these housing stocks are completely destroyed, some of them are vandalized, some of them are in good use. My question is, who does it belong to, this housing stock next to your railway line? Because if you add all the houses next to your railway lines in the whole of the country, you're going to get a significant number of houses that's underutilized. My question is, who does it belong to, and what initiatives do you envisage to utilize this underutilized housing stock? whether to use local people, joining farmers, whatever the case may be. It's heartbroken to see so many empty houses traveling by rail not being used. Thank you.
My question is one and relates to what the first question of Mr. Kurnov. But I must submit that I'll be sending you a list of questions, and I'm inviting members to do so also, that you go and consider so that when you come back you respond to them. You have planned for 30 years, and your basis is 65 commodities. For me, that's not even futuristic. You can't really plan in terms of the commodities that are being manufactured right now and all those things. It's devoid of what strategic direction we want to take as a country, as it's also devoid of the demands in the international market. Have you considered China's hunger for energy, for instance, and south-to-south demands, etc.? There's no way you can plan on the basis of 65 commodities. We don't even know what list of commodities is that. So the need to link up to have a DTI is here. The need for you to have your basis of planning as the future, the strategic direction that the country is mapping for itself for the next 30 to 50 years is crucial. So we will be harping on you on that one. I don't accept that you can only plan in terms of commodities. Also, if you say that you are going to build a mega terminal in Gauteng, what informs that? Is it informed by the plans, the long-term plans of the country? If you look at the volumes that are coming into the Devon and where there is congestion currently, PE, etc., etc., for me, I don't understand then why the mega terminal in the future should go to Johannesburg. What informs that? Is it overall general national planning? Is it a thumbs up from your point? And also, what initiatives are you doing in terms of inputting into the country's intention to develop, to grow rural economies? So for me, you have not. And secondly, another linked question will be, a sub question will be, I don't see in your planning, your account of the resources that the state is putting into your infrastructure plan, because those resources must address what the state says it wants to achieve. And then separate from that, then you say the other resources are these that you envisage to get from the private sector, from the bonds that you say that you will offer in the US, UK markets, etc., etc. Primarily, the resources that the state is putting into your infrastructure plan must address the issues that the state says must be addressed. The issues of equity, growing the issue of rural development. So for me, until your basis is national planning as informed by industrial policy framework, informed by the long-term strategic planning of the state, and until it addresses what state resources, what the state wants to move towards, you are not talking. So I think that you'll go and fine-tune your plans in terms of those lines, and I hope through you, Chair, that when we meet DTI, Transport, and others would also tell us their perspective. Thank you.
I will invite questions and comments from the members of the Portfolio Committee on Transport. Honourable Farrow and Honourable De Freester.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Many of the questions, I think, have been sort of embraced in some of the other members' queries, but just as a broad policy principle, we've been debating the issue of road versus rail at many of these forums over the 10 years, certainly, that I've been here and these joint sittings of these committees.
But when you look at the Transnet presentation relating to road, and you see that they're only getting a 60% capacity currently in terms of their current efficiencies, one wonders why then there hasn't been closer liaison between Transnet on the one hand and Transport on the other. Because clearly the regulation mechanisms and legislation to enable certain goods to go by rail is vested in the Minister of Transport. And I believe that that would be one of the clear policies that need to come out of this discussion here today, that we actually look at ways of actually moving those hardcore traditional goods that traditionally go by rail back onto rail and off the road, and that what my colleague said about the deterioration and the overloading that's taking effect on our national roads, which is costing billions of rand with a backlog of nearly 200 billion, are going to be offset, because we are talking from the same pot at the end of the day when it comes to money. So this road-to-rail debate needs to be, Madam Chair, put onto the agenda very quickly, and we look at mechanisms in order to us to try and rectify that and maybe to increase the capacity of the current utilization of that infrastructure from the 60% up to 100%. Then maybe we would talk about the competitiveness that we want out of people opting to take rail as opposed to road. I'll just make that as a comment. Which brings me to the point. Sorry? I beg your pardon? Someone's using the cell phone here. I mean, that's rude. It's not allowed. Chairperson, I just want to also compliment Sue Lund in terms of the initiative she's taking, because at the last meeting when the previous CEO was here, Maria Ramos, we raised from the transport portfolio the very issue about branch lines, and not only branch lines, the actual status of those branch lines vis-a-vis opportunities that could arise for rural development, which is a new department here which needs to take a handle and maybe be invited into this particular forum to discuss the issues of how we... I would like to see at the next meeting a full disposition of what the current status is of those lines, whether in fact there is any railway lines left or bridges or even infrastructure to be able to offer that opportunity to some concession that will enable us, as we've done in the Eastern Cape on the Kai Rail initiative, to try and get a joint goods type passenger rail services introduced in some of these areas where they are now redundant. So I would please ask if that report, which we asked for 12 months ago, is actually brought to this forum very, very much at the next meeting, together with the status of the transport, I mean the tourist industry in respect of the Otoniqua, Choo Choo, and the Apple Express and those other opportunities that come on, which we haven't had or seen. And just finally, the regulatory process. You know, I found this comment on slide 15 by Kaya quite interesting. Who regulates the regulator? Well, we do. That regulator is, in terms of the law, in terms of Act, falls under transport, in terms of port regulators. And I would like to know that, you know, whenever these regulators are presented with massive increases of tariffs, that it's not just offsetting the cost of running your particular organization at a loss. And it appears that it becomes an offset in saying, well, we've got a balance sheet which doesn't look so hot anymore. Can we now push the tariffs up to compensate for that? And it's happening across not only this parastatal, but every other one of the agencies of government. And I think the time has come that we've got to look clearly at that as a way of preventing the capital injection which has to go in to some of these developments not being just clearly offset because of a regulatory process. And I don't know whether the fact that the CEO, when he talked about now separate wholly owned divisions, is not causing this very problem, because it doesn't allow now for any cross-subsidization to take a place from some of the cash cows that you're actually getting a lot of money from that don't need to be capitalized. I'm going to stop there, Madam Chair. I've got a lot more to say. But just to say, from a pure policy position, there's always been this question of who wears the hat. Two ministers, two ministries, and two particular people running transport in this country. There's commentators out there now saying that maybe the time has come that these sort of agencies should all be seen to be put under one roof. And I'm just wondering whether it will solve the problem of what we've been discussing by most of the members here today. Thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'll be brief in my questions. The first is the the kickoff from what Honourable Ferrer was saying, is has there been discussion amongst the various departments and ministries with bringing Transnet in under one roof, where it would be under all transport-related issues be together, and they could be then talk to each other more comfortably and deal with issues that way. So that would be the first. The second is with regards the ports. I read lots of reports, and also in the media as well, it's covered quite extensively that we're losing South Africa a lot of business because the Durban port, which is the biggest port in the country, is so inefficient that now businesses are moving to Maputo. And there is big businesses, and I can give you a variety of examples, no time now, where international companies are using the Durban port are now no longer doing so because of inefficiency and expense. Much more economical to then use Maputo and bring in goods into South Africa via a different country. I'd like some comment on that and some explanation, and what does Transnet plan to do to rectify the situation, because I think it's shocking if we're losing business because of inefficiency. And then, early on in the discussion, in the presentation, you spoke about the rail gauges, and that throughout, I understood, and I may be interpreting correctly, that throughout sub-Saharan Africa, at least, probably the rest of the continent, the wide gauges are being used. Is that the case? And is there some kind of concerted effort from our side to try and keep it standardized throughout, making it easier for not only for us but for everybody else, our neighbors and so forth, so that rail transport is a lot easier that way? And then some comments and some insight into electricity hikes and how that would affect Transnet. Thank you.
Okay. I think that it is very clear now that we needed more time as different portfolios so that we can look at issues from a common perspective, which is why we have, as chairperson, taken a decision that we would need a follow-up meeting, probably allocate a day, so that we would even give the Department of Transport an opportunity to present its perspective, as well as the Department of Trade and Industry. Having said that, I would want to wrap this meeting now. But before I do that, let me first acknowledge the presentation on the National Infrastructure Plan presented to us by Transnet. It is a very detailed plan that we did not get an opportunity of reading on our own and also discuss it as the different study groups, because whatever is discussed at portfolio committee level is first processed at a study group level, so that members of different political parties would bring to this table a view of a political party, not a view of an individual within a political party. So that process has not been followed. As a result, you would find that some members would ask questions that would have been clarified at a study group level if that had happened. And also, if it was processed at study group level and members of the Portfolio Committee on Transport would have reflected to previous presentations that were made to them that relate to this, so that when they come in here, they debate issues from that point of view. And that has not happened. Now, coming to the observations that I have made, speaking from here, I think that the presentation lacks the social and economic development context. I'm going to explain myself on this. if you were to take that one issue mentioned here, the thinking around the development of a mega terminal in Gauteng or Cape Town. If I view that from a development practitioner's perspective, I would see it as an attempt to retain the two worlds in one country, the first world and the third world, in a sense that Cape Town and Gauteng are far developed than areas with the presidential poverty nodal point. And if I were to compare that to the development approach of China, where they used infrastructure development to attract economic development in areas where investment would not have happened if there was no infrastructural development, that resulting with them being able to address their social problem. This plan doesn't speak to social development objectives, to economic development objectives that relate to social economic development issues. I also look at the geographical setup of the country. All the ports are in the south, but the mega terminal would be inland. When there are two provinces in the south, Eastern Cape and KZN, that are both poverty-stricken provinces. So the plan doesn't take into consideration that the infrastructural development has also to take into consideration the social and economic development of the rural areas and underdeveloped areas. What I've also observed is that the presentation reflects a different view from the view of the Department of Transport in relation to what Honorable Farrow has talked about, the road infrastructure versus rail infrastructure. How does the rail infrastructural development ease the congestion on the road? The plan doesn't speak about that. It also doesn't speak about the reduction of both the cost for traveling and transporting goods, as well as the time taken to travel and transport goods. Which then brings us to the next debate of what is it that would inform us the type of rail gauge that we would want to develop in South Africa? Why would we maintain? What are the advantages of maintaining a narrow gauge as opposed to developing a standard gauge? And how we see Africa as a continent? Not how South Africa relates to the continent only, but how Africa as a continent relates to the global village. Because in the first slide, you are showing South Africa as the gateway to Africa, connecting the African continent to the international world. But in them, your proposals of what is happening internationally in terms of rail infrastructure development and what exists in Africa, that debate is not connected. Those are the observations that I have made, and I think that we would need to further debate this and allow the Department of Transport to put its views on the table, as well as the Department of
trade and industry to put its use. And then the cross-cutting department, that those that are providing cross-cutting support services, like the Department of Energy and the Department of Water Affairs and all those, because there are things that cannot happen without those departments playing a role in whatever we are doing. Lastly, the issue of agriculture and agrarian revolution in the rural areas. This plan also doesn't take that into consideration. So, all in all, we are saying we've heard you. We don't totally agree. We think we need to further debate this issue. We appreciate that you have done this work, because without this document, we wouldn't even start debating these issues. So we are not saying that you haven't worked. We are saying you have worked. We appreciate the efforts put in this. However, we are making observations, and we would want us to engage and debate those issues so that we arrive at a common level. Lastly, the issue of planning commission also needs to be taken into further debates. I don't know, I see chairperson of public enterprises whispering to me that there is a member that would want to speak.
It's not a member,
it's Department of Transport.
Yes, me being.
Yeah.
It's entirely upon you, Chair. I was just bringing the hand to your attention. The decision lies with you.
Yeah. You see, there is something called protocol. And if you have said you are wrapping up as a chairperson, it means you are the last person to speak. And this matter is not closed. It would have been a different situation if the matter was closed. We have not finalized on this issue. And if the Department of Transport has got a suggestion, they are free to talk to me as the chairperson. We're having a meeting at 2 o'clock, and we will bring those suggestions onto the table. Thank you very much. I declare the meeting closed.
Long live the chair.
Thank you.